Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name's Garnet Lee, and I have an excellent show for you today. Not the least of the reasons for which, however you put all those prepositions together in the proper grammatical order, would be that we have Andrew Yoon here from New York City.
Yeah!
Woo!
Shaq News' East Coast editor.
Thank you for having me.
The best dressed man in gaming, I would say.
That is true. Both of us are wearing video game t-shirts, but you are wearing Mr. Jeff Cannata, N's. One T. I'll spell it for you.
Thank you, sir.
Because it's less pretentious that way.
Slightly.
You've gone all Zav D'Amato's hockey superfan on me.
Yeah. I am. He took me to one game, and that's all it took, man.
I like how he got him the classic one. You know, it's like got the like weathered look. Because you've had that T-shirt for what, a week?
Actually, my mom bought this for me.
Yeah. Did you honestly just assume that I bought him a t-shirt? Like, I want you to get into hockey so much that I'm going to buy you clothing now.
Well, it's Maple Leafs. I mean, that's your team.
It is my team.
That's your team. Hey, look, he comes in. You've been to a hockey game. You've bonded together over the puck. And
we did.
And so I thought,
puck? I don't know. Never mind.
Well, I could have said you bonded together over the stick. That would have been much worse.
And then you did, so.
And then I did, anyway.
Now it happened.
That's right. That's Mr. Zav D'Amato's down there at the end of the table.
Hey, one X, no Z.
Nice.
Well, I'll spell it for you.
Nice.
One X. Oh.
Yeah, you like that,
that
huh?
Yeah. It's all helpful. It's all helpful information. That's all it is.
That is true. I'm
one
and two
T's
also.
Yeah.
We could have this whole alphabetical
discussion.
How you spell you? Anyway, rather than do that, let's talk about what's going to be on the show today. We're going to talk about the VGA stuff. There was a ton of great trailers during the television trailer palooza that is the VGAs on Spike.
Yes.
I'm specifically not using that other word that some people associate with them.
Award show?
It's not an award show. It's a video game. It's a video game television preview show paid for by publishers to show you what's coming up in the coming year.
This is indeed true. Yeah. Actually, someone I saw on Twitter, from Twitter, so I don't know the veracity of the statement, but for what it's worth, someone said they calculated the exact time that was spent on giving awards away on the show out of the hour and a half television program.
Uh-huh.
7 minutes, 20 seconds.
Actually, I think that's a lot more than I thought it was, you know?
That's what
I heard
on the
Twitter.
New
record, guys. Call Guinness.
And if it's on the Twitter, it's got to be true.
Do you follow the rhythm? And this is, I guess, like something because, you know, we've produced a number of shows or whatever. You sort of pay attention a little bit to the production stuff. The rhythm of they did an award early on. It was the one that Batman won, right?
Yeah.
And then there was like no awards for an hour. And then they do like that quick thing of, and here are a bunch of other awards.
That was the hilarious part.
Those are the awards. Okay, now let's move on.
That was hilarious. That was literally like, you know, the fine print is the awards. Is here's what these were given away, and this was given away, and that was given away. And sorry, Tennessee. You know,
you know who was complaining about it the most on Twitter was Mark Hamill, because he was upset that he was sitting in the rafters.
Right.
If you sit up close, you know you're going to win your award, because if you're not going to win, they sit you up in the bleachers. Mark Hamill sitting in the bleachers. He was nominated for best human voice, whatever the hell the category is called. And he was like, well, you know, I don't care that I didn't win, but at least if you invite me to an award show, don't make me sit up here. Like, he apparently got mad that he was sitting so far away from the stage.
The award that I didn't know they gave out, and I don't remember, I mean, I didn't even watch it last year, but I happened to watch some of it this year. But the award that I think is the biggest evidence of it being a farce is Most Anticipated Game.
Brought to you by Doritos.
That's actually an award. The fact that that's an award. The Most Anticipated Game.
Is that one of the games?
Well, there's also Best Trailer.
Yeah.
Best Trailer was up there, too.
Well, I mean, at least that's something that is a thing. Like, Most Anticipated Game is just people are really looking forward to this one. You know, at least a trailer is an actual piece of art that you're looking at, you know? I don't know. It's just like this nebulous kind of
idea. As long
as
we get sidetracked into this part of it, what do you think of the tenor of the show in general?
Well, it's difficult when you start right off with the teabagging thing.
Thank you. You.
That's difficult.
No, get it out of the way. You know?
Get
that's
your
what
teabagging
I
out of the
way. But that entire thing was just set up so Infinity Ward could do that joke later. Like, that was the point of it. So later on, the guy from Sledgehammer was gently put down. Like,
yeah. Wait. So are you saying that they were using foreshadowing?
Yes.
That, it, in fact, the VGAs are a great literary piece.
I don't know if you know this about Call of Duty in general. Amazing storytelling. Do you, I don't know if you're aware of this. We need to sit down. We'll have a conversation. Have you read the novelization?
Oh my God! There's novel.
Player One Response. Like, sorry.
I mean, honestly, it's like criticizing the MTV Movie Awards for not being a movie award show. That's not what they're trying to do.
I agree. That's
what
I'm saying. It's a TV show.
But at least in the movie award category, there's a counterpoint.
Yeah.
You know, we have other more serious award shows, which we don't have in the video game arena.
We do, absolutely.
Well, yeah, we have GDC gives away awards.
Right. Are those televised?
No.
Exactly. Well, I think the interactive art ones at DICE are that's the show.
Are those televised?
Sorry, that was what I was thinking of.
They're not.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so you're saying, oh, you're not saying that we don't have
the
award shows.
I'm not saying we don't have actual awards.
You're saying that the award shows aren't on mainstream television.
Yeah, well, this is the face put forward for the industry.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. and while other industries have silly faces put forward, and that's fine, there's a counterpoint to that as well. And there's like, oh, well, this is servicing one sort of fun side of it. But there's also a serious, like, let's award these people something. And we just don't.
The teabagging thing was such a turnoff to me because of what you're talking about, because it's the time that if you're going to tell a family member or whatever, oh, hey, you know, there's video game things you do. Oh, that's right. There's an award show for you guys this weekend or whatever. I'm going to watch that.
Exactly.
And they get to watch some dude like, that joke doesn't play to anyone but the hardest of hardcore audience members anyway.
Can I tell you something?
Who aren't Spike viewers anyway and hate the show.
The scenario you just described is exactly what happened to me anecdotally.
Oh, really?
I was at a friend's house. We were playing a board game. And it was around 8 o'clock. And I went, oh, my God, the VGAs are on right now. Let's turn it on. Oh, yeah, let's turn it on.
Even worse for me, I was actually, I don't have cable at home, so I had to go to a friend's house in order to work, you know,
in order to
break out those posts, and you know. And he had a lot of friends over. I mean, there were about 15 people there, and I was just with my laptop, you know, all angry and depressed, like, and then the VGAs are on, and they're watching it, and they're like, what's going on? And I felt bad that I had to, like, defend the industry, you know? It's like, this is the face that they're seeing, like, and the teabagging. They're like, what's going on? And
I'm like, why is that guy doing that?
And I'm like, well, you know, in this game, they crouch and forget it. Because I had to give up. It just got worse and worse as the evening went on.
It's almost, I don't want to use the phrase low-hanging fruit because that would come to the wrong image, but it's almost too easy to criticize the show for that moment. It's like, it should have been obvious to anyone putting that together. That, and as much as I like Felicia and am a fan of her in a lot of ways, all those little cut to Felicia doing wacky stuff.
The Nickelodeon channel stuff?
Yeah.
Like, where did that come? Like, that was the addition to the show?
Yeah, the only reason why I didn't have much of a problem with that is because they were doing that with the guise of it being for charity, for child's play.
Sure.
You know, that's the reason why I didn't really have too much of a problem with it, but
There's other ideas for doing stuff for charity that could have been mined.
Absolutely. I mean,
coming up next
there were other
on the Spike
things.
VGA's Double Dare. Yeah.
There were things like, you know, Zachary Levi, who I think did a very good job.
He did a great job. Mm-hmm.
There were parts where he was, you know, drinking health potions and then asking whether or not it was someone's urine.
It was awful.
You know, other things like that. All this little shtick that they tried to throw in there. The thing that was sad was they started, and it was part of the gag, but they said that if your acceptance speech runs too long, the three people who were actually going to go on stage.
Acceptance speech, like there were the acceptance speeches.
Then the guy would teabag. That was bad enough. But then they gave some random screaming, swearing YouTube commenter 10 minutes.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was weird.
And it's like, you know, it would
be. I'd already stopped watching.
And I wrote on Twitter, I was like, it'd be great if maybe some of the people who won awards and the people we want to represent this industry had some of that time to talk about this industry rather than some guy who was screaming and saying that he was going to put his foot up Spike President's ass and all this shit. Like, that's not even mainstream, too. So it just seems so silly.
You could have really learned all you needed to know about the award ceremony by just looking at the award itself.
I think the award's
it's a
kinda,
fucking
you,
monkey.
I think
yeah.
it's kind of funny.
Is it supposed to be kind of funny?
I don't know. I mean, I don't actually have a problem.
It's just like,
how is it any better than a naked dude like holding a sword or whatever? You know?
Well, he's golden. There's some class there.
So that makes it classy.
It's classy.
Well, I think the only thing classing up the VGAs were the trailers, of course, which is really what we all wound up watching for anyway. The right. big one being the Metal Gear Rising Revengeance unveiling and announcement, which also, along with a very interesting and candid interview session on Monday that Konami hosted with both Kojima from Kojima Productions and Inaba from Platinum Games talking about this partnership they've entered into to make the game. And the thing that stood out to me the most right off the bat is they're not beating around the bush. You know, Kojima copped right off the bat to, hey, you know what? The rumors were true. It really wasn't much of a game. It wasn't coming together for us. It was completely adrift. And in fact, we had stuck it on the shelf and didn't know what to do with it. Now, I think that, A, I don't speak Japanese, but listening to the way translators struggled with framing it, I think that there's maybe a little bit of an overreach here that it sounds like he was trying to carefully explain that they didn't cancel the program. As like they didn't kill Rising. They just pulled the plug on doing it internally and like took a step back and said, okay, how the hell do we do this thing?
Yeah, well, I'm not a translator either, but Revengeance?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about.
Dude, that's revenge with a vengeance.
The documentary they released the following day after the interview that you went to is very candid as well.
Yep.
And they basically say that, and the thing that I feel, I watched that video and I feel, and me and Andrew were talking about this earlier, where you kind of look at Kojima and it's like he, you can see in his eyes, he doesn't want to do Metal Gear anymore, but he feels like he has to do it.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Like, and his team, he keeps talking about like, you know, we came up with this idea and we gave it to a young team because we thought they could do it, but they didn't. And then they interviewed those guys and it's like, yes, we failed. It's like, it's horrible. I felt terrible for everyone involved. And then they do say that they canceled that idea, but they didn't want to throw away all of the concepts they created
right.
for it. And that's when Platinum came into play. And, you know, a lot of stuff is changing now, and I think part of the reason why that documentary was so
candid, it's the same game. Kojima said it's the exact same game.
It's really not.
It's the exact same game.
It's really not, though. New engine, completely different
But it's
scenario.
The exact same game.
It's a different story. I mean, Platinum is writing some of the characters. The reason why I think they're being so candid in this documentary is because when you tell hardcore Metal Gear fans, oh, yeah, the next Metal Gear game is not made by Kojima Productions, that's probably going to send tensions rising.
Definitely.
So, revengeance.
People are going to get revengeance on them.
Yeah, that really needs to change, Kojima Productions and Platinum Games. But I think maybe that's why they're like, hey, listen, it wasn't working, and these guys are really saving the game. And I think they're putting that forward for people who are now thinking, this isn't a real Metal Gear game because Kojima's not working on it.
I mean, the interesting part to me about the technical aspects of why it didn't work made a lot of sense game design wise. Like the idea they went into it with was that, among other things, with this katana, you'd be able to cut through anything, and they got it. And then they realized, oh, by the way, if I can cut through every building, it means I can infinitely destroy every level, and I can't make a level big enough to hold you because I have to eventually artificially drop a wall that you can't cut through with your katana that you're supposed to be able to cut through everything with, which doesn't make any sense. It sort of breaks that fundamental design piece. And then the other thing that Kojima brought up was him telling his team, you know, you guys, you don't have to have the stealth part in there. And them saying, well, work with us. Let us keep this idea for a little while. Let us see if we can do the stealth element. I wonder, based on response especially, whether maybe the team feels this, maybe they feel a better connection with Metal Gear than where Kojima is now. Maybe a Metal Gear game has to have a stealth element. How about this? Who wants to play a Metal Gear spinoff that's just an action game that happens to say Metal Gear because it takes place with Metal Gear characters?
Yeah.
Okay with that.
I mean, I like Metal Gear, and I think that the whole concept of Rising when it was first envisioned was, you know, everyone loved that cutscene in 4 where Raiden is kicking everything's ass, and you're like, it'd be great if we could play this. And I think that kernel in people's minds were like, it'd be great if I could play this as a part in Metal Gear 4 and still get my Metal Gear 4 and then play that one section, and they're breaking it off into a new game. But I think the original team had a problem with going the complete action route, which is what Kojima thought would work for this particular title.
Obviously, what Kojima thought would work for this was to go action-oriented. I mean, I think that when he says that this is the exact same game, it's because to his design sense of what he was concepting when he handed it off to the team was, hey, here's what you should do with Raiden. He's a badass dude with a sword. He's going to go kick some ass.
I think that's valid. I'm not a MGS super fan, but I think it's a rich enough universe that these characters can have their own play styles and be in their own games and live in their own universe.
Absolutely.
I mean, if Mario can have a party, play tennis, and go go-kart riding. I don't know why Metal Gear can't either.
Well,
wait, I mean, Metal Gear go-kart got announced? Oh, shit, son.
Hey, Snake has been skateboarding.
Oh, yeah,
oh, that
true.
Is
yeah,
true.
Yeah,
oh, my
yeah,
God, that's
yeah.
how it just hit
so,
me.
He has been skateboarding, so it's not without precedent. What'd you think of the Rex battle then? I mean, was that then the extension you wanted to see of, you know, riding down there with his, pulling up his katana and blocking, you know, that now Rex transforms into a giant sword arm and he's holding it up? And it was almost very.
I think it looks really cool. I'm really surprised because today they announced that the PS3 is the lead platform. It's a bit of news that came out, or that was something that came out of an interview, which is a little surprising considering Platinum's history with the PS3.
Well, and I think that's why they did that.
They've never actually. I think they've always handed off the PS3 versions of their games. No,
well,
right?
Vanquish was a PS3, okay. PS3 lead as well.
Oh, was it? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, did Vanquish use the same engine that Bayonetta used?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well then I guess that
I'm
that
sure they're just building
up
their technology, but I think that they faced a tough battle after Bayonetta when there was a big, you know, delta between the two games.
Right.
That they needed to get back on even footing for this generation, especially for this game, which is going to be, you know, very clearly targeted to Japanese domestic market as well.
Yeah.
They got to do well there, and they're not going to do well on 360.
You don't think this would do well on 360?
In Japan?
Oh, in Japan.
The install base isn't there. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. They have to be able to target that and say, hey, we're still building this game here.
That's part of the reason why he said that he didn't want to go to a Western developer with this game is because he was afraid that all the swords would turn into guns with chainsaws
on them.
That was an awesome quote, by the way.
Yeah, it's an awesome quote, but did he forget Twin Snakes, which is like still the most most insane Japanese-y version of Metal Gear ever? You know?
Yeah, made by Canadians.
Yeah,
made by
Canadians.
Canadians, yeah. Those quacky people.
So from the Platinum side, I guess my other question would be then, you know, we've seen them make spectacular games, but the big knock against those games has often been that the storylines behind them have been ridiculous. We talk about Vanquish, we talk about Bayonetta. What happens now with them building on the Metal Gear world, which...
Right,
really,
it doesn't have any ridiculous story.
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
It's
like you line them up to each
other.
It's
the perfect fit. If anything, it's the perfect fit. Like, I know a lot of people tell me, like, you need to play Bayonetta because it's great. And I never really had interest in it. But I really want to play this game because they're already crazy over there, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the guys at Platinum are insane. And combining them with Kojima, it's like that, you know, this game could potentially be like... You know, what did you could pile drive a tank or some shit in Bayonetta? Like, imagine what Raiden's gonna do now. That's crazy.
Pile drive a tank wearing only hair.
Exactly. No, that's Bayonetta. Yeah. Bayonetta.
Well, no, Raiden has a history of getting naked, though. Let's not forget that.
This is true.
I don't know what your fanfic says.
The man's toes are very useful.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
There's a lot of passion around games like Metal Gear Solid, and this is an interesting question that Tashi brought to us over Twitter. Tashi says, how much influence or feedback should a developer take from fans when they're creating a sequel? I think that's a really interesting, you know, question to throw out there. Like, how much do you want from the developer, and then how much do you want them to start reading into the fan? And then the other question is, then what happens when you see, especially as we see now, a studio that was fans of a game series then go on to make the next game, like Sly Cooper?
Right.
Yeah, it's a tough proposition because oftentimes a developer is going to hear from a vocal minority.
Yep.
So first of all, you're hearing from people. You rarely hear from people that love what you're doing. You hear from people that are pissed about something very specific, usually. And
we know a little bit. We know a little bit about that.
We do, and oftentimes that feedback is really skewed. And one of the worst things you can do as an artist, if I can use that word,
artist.
Or as a creative force, is to subjugate your vision to sort of a mass appeal idea. And at the same time, you want to listen to the people you're selling your games to and the people that are, you're earning their dollar and feed what they get most excited about. So it's a very tough tightrope to walk, I think. And I think you definitely have to listen, but you have to filter that through your own sense of sort of creative vision.
Yeah.
So you know where your goal is, where you're headed, and you can sort of try to – because I think if you're a servant of too many masters – all of a sudden, your whole game idea gets diluted and things feel all cobbled together out of, you know, trying to please everyone.
Someone who really articulates that very well in the development community is Cliff Bleszinski. Every time you talk to him, like when I talk to him for Gears of War 2 and 3, they always talk about how they want to broaden the appeal, but if they change too much, then people get upset with them because they've killed the game that they love. So it's like a situation where they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't.
Right.
And it's about walking that fine line. And the problem is like, you know, when you try to broaden the appeal for a game that's already really hardcore and niche like that, the only way you can do it is by adding casual elements to it. And that's sometimes just the existence of those things really upsets your hardcore market. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know,
not only that, but from the outside looking in, oftentimes you don't realize what you want. You think you know what you want a lot of times. You know what I'm saying?
That's very true. I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and it seems like you have a sense that, oh man, this game would be so much better if X, Y, and Z were true. And you have no insight into the design process of maybe they tried all those ideas and maybe that didn't work out. And maybe you don't even realize that that would upset the balance. Maybe, you know, I'm just throwing this out there from nowhere, but maybe having co-op in Skyrim would make the game suck. You know what I mean? Like, everybody wants that. Everybody, but maybe right. that, you know, terrible example, but there's a lot of things like
I don't think
like
that's
that.
A terrible example necessarily, because it's one we talk about a lot. It kind of points to the fact that they're making the game, so those guys centered around Todd Howard's team have a very clear idea. This is the game we want to make.
Right.
And you know what? That's not part of it. And they stay on target and they stay right. true to their creative vision. And they're not getting distracted by that stuff. I think that, you know, another game that stands out to me as one that could have gotten distracted but didn't is God of War 3. Because God of War 3 really hit the God of War notes. And let's be honest, you know, over the course of God of War 1 and 2, and especially after 2, there was a lot of, well, do they do too many QTEs? And is the combat the right sort of combat? Should it be more like Ninja Gaiden? Should it be more like, you know, insert whatever other action game? Should it be more like Bayonetta? Should it be, you know, more technical? Should it be this or should it be that? And they said, you know, we know what we're making with God of War. Mm-hmm. This is our combat design. Here's what we're going to make. We know where we're going to put our interactives in. We know what kind of camera control we're going to do. We're still going to control the camera. We're still going to have these giant, you know, they kept true to the God of War, whatever that is.
Formula.
I hate to call it a formula because it sounds very, you know, scientific. Yeah. Whatever the creative document is that, like, you put together around the game design docs that go around God of War, and they still made a great God of War game.
I mean, I don't know if you guys ever read the Steve Jobs biography, but I mean, essentially what he says is, you know, don't listen to fans per se. Give them something they don't even know they want yet. You know, that's just
that's the most difficult thing to do. I mean, that is what makes him a genius, really, and is so difficult. People chase that. It's that thing that no one has thought of yet, and to have the courage of your conviction to be able to be so fully behind your creative vision that you are willing to take those risks. Very few people are able to do that. And especially with a sequel. You know, if you're looking at these franchises that are supposed to maintain a consistent user base and also expand and give something fresh and new, it's a very tricky thing. I mean, we criticize Call of Duty for, you know, not sort of regurgitating the same formula over and over. And I think it's a valid criticism. But at the same time, what are they supposed to do?
It's
you know, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. You know, you can't change things up too radically because you have such a strong, huge fan base for this very specific thing.
But every time they change it up, you know, they do get a huge success. I mean, Nazi Zombies was a big surprise.
Nazi Zombies was a big surprise.
You know,
that's a good
moving one. Moving it into the modern era obviously helped them a lot. So, you know, they just have to keep on thinking, like, what's that thing that's going to surprise and delight people?
We've got a lot of things to surprise and delight you in the rest of this show, including more trailers. We've got Naughty Dog's upcoming new IP, Last of Us, the very action-oriented Mass Effect 3 trailer. That was either, like, I think that was very polarizing. Some people are, you know, now it's a running simulator.
Yeah.
And other people are very hot to the RPG side of it. We've got Andrew's report on Sony's New York City demo day where they had everything. He played Syndicate. I want to play Syndicate. You got to play Syndicate. You got to see Journey. So we got a lot of great stuff coming up. Don't go anywhere. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. A few smooth tones. Like, Jeff's smiling at me. He's very disarming when he does that. He's very disarming when he does that.
Do you guys want us to leave the room? What's going on?
Yeah.
You didn't disarm anybody with your min-max conversation. There are a few people who want to take you to task on that. And then also, where was it? One of our commenters. I have it here someplace. But we'll figure it out. Oh, Shadow 13th. He's calling you out later. You ready to be called out?
I guess. I prefer he calls me Jeff, but you can call me out if you want.
Out. So let's see. Last of Us, Naughty Dog's new game. They've been working on it for 2 years. For my money, the best trailer of the show. I loved it because...
Really?
You didn't like it.
I liked it. It just makes me chagrined at the dearth of ideas in this industry.
Chagrined.
You know what
by
I
the
mean?
Dearth of ideas, Jeff Cannata went wandering for new video games.
It's just like, really? That's what we went with?
Don't
Naughty
judge.
Dog, you're so great. You're so great. This is, it may end up being, it could,
hey, don't write the
odds are
if you're
it's
going to
be a great
it.
Game. It's going to be a great game that I'll love playing, but it just, oh my God, a new IP from Naughty Dog. What is it? Oh,
it's not zombies.
It's
is what
not
it
zombies.
Is. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the I Am Alive trailer from E3 a couple of years ago, where the guy was trying to survive by himself and then
or
he's
Dead
attacked.
Island,
or Dead Island. Or Dead Island. One,
or I Am Legend.
It is essentially I Am Legend. Also, if they're not zombies, I hope when they say that it's not zombies, they don't mean
doesn't matter.
That it's like weird. Well, they're not called zombies.
No, they're fungal infected people.
Oh, just, okay.
Yeah, they're fungal infected people. And then the two survivors we saw, Joel and Ellie.
And Ellen Page, yeah, okay. It looked like Ellen Page. I'm just going to say.
They're Joel and Ellie. Okay. They're trying to make their way through this horrible post-apocalyptic world. And it's their story of survival. It's very Walking Dead because the idea, of course, is the emphasis on their handling.
It's very 12 things you could bring up. And that's what's so sad about
that's
it.
That's not sad at all.
To me, it is.
Well, let's not forget that when Uncharted debuted, it was like, oh, it's just, you know, Tomb Raider with a dude, you know? It's,
it is.
And it is.
And it's great, but it also...
So let
but
this
it
be
brought
great.
Something new to a ta- it brought something new to the table.
Do we know if Amy is working on this?
We don't.
Okay.
We're hopefully going to find that out. We do know that Enslaved creative director? I don't know exactly what his title was. Neil Druckmann is leading this team, though, is working on the...
Many QTAs are we over-undering on this?
Dude. Seriously, Enslaved is one of my favorite games.
I loved Enslaved, but that's the argument people make about that game. It had a lot of QTAs, and it had a lot of, like, glowing shit.
Well, it's going to have glowing ledges. Obviously,
glowing
now
ledges
every place you're going to jump to will glow. It'll be like, yes. Oh, I'm going to jump there next.
Again, I will say, this game could end up being so great, and I really hope it does. It just... as soon as I saw it, it's like, it's the same shit, different day, you know, and it sucks, and it makes me sad.
So you don't really watch a lot of movies anymore then, right?
No, that's the problem. I watch a shit ton of movies.
Oh, but you don't like them, right?
No, I love movies.
You
Stop.
Love loving things.
Wait, so you like things
you know
where...
what I'm talking about.
But you don't like rom-coms anymore new. Because rom-coms, you know, they usually follow a you know, pretty.
Hey, the argument.
I like how you went to my favorite genre. Right.
You know what?
Turn this
eating is stupid. Because,
eating
you know,
is stupid
because you have to do it three times a day. Same shit.
I think
I am never eating a tuna melt ever again.
I think
that's
the point everyone is trying to make is that you can go either way with it. You can either be like, "Let's see what happens," or you're disappointed in it. We don't know shit about it.
Of
yet.
Course,
and you we're know judging. What I mean? And we're judging it based only on the trailer.
I will say yet again, I'm sure it's going to be a fine game.
Scotch?
No.
I've had scotch before.
I hear what you're saying. These assholes keep talking.
They're abstracting my point to the point of ridiculousness. But what I'm trying to say is that if it was something really fresh and really different, it would be so much more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been conveyed in that trailer, I think.
Yeah.
So can I give you my counterpoint, which is that I think that too often in the video game industry, because it's still very young and it's grown with you know, the growth curve for these different media types has gotten exponentially faster with each one. So if you go back and say, originally we had plays, and there was a very long literary history of the development of plays and the way they were displayed, and of course there was a very long curve, long tail, right? So then maybe you move forward into, let's move forward quickly to make the analogy, radio drama,
and then
yada,
1990.
Yada, yada, we're in space.
Radio dramas, movies, motion pictures, now we're up to games, and games very quickly have come along, and what happened is, you know, for 10 years, was like, We got to be better technology. You got to do something new. You got to be better technology. You got to do something new. Well, the media eventually has to evolve to, hey, we have a pretty stable platform. We have a pretty stable, you know, set of tools, a palette here of here's how we make games. Here's a process by which we make games. Let's start telling some cool stories.
Right.
This can be a cool story. And it could be a great story of which you've seen certain ones, certain similar stories before.
Right.
I mean, you've seen superhero movies and you like superhero movies.
I'm not...
Not to go back to movies, but I'm saying, you know, there's comic books, same
thing. I think that's what Jeff is saying. He's saying that there's the potential's there. He's just giving his first impression.
And I'm there, the story, like, listen, I read The Road. I was blown away that you could take a very conventional post-apocalyptic story and tell something human and father-son in that.
I just hope Joel's not a pedophile.
I admit that there could be a great story here. I'm not worried about the storytelling.
Okay.
I'm worried about what I infer to be the gameplay elements that are like every other... If you were asked what is likely going to be a part of this game, you could list off six or seven things that you'll be doing over and over that you do in a thousand other games and a thousand other things, and it's fine.
And there's probably a modicum of truth to that, and there's also probably some misdirection there, knowing Naughty Dog, where they want you to think something. They've actually said already, though, that you know that they were showing things that going on in the game there, that yeah, there's going to be melee combat. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's going to be guns, and you'll be shooting things, which I don't think that comes as any surprise.
Right.
In video games, yeah.
No multiplayer. Evidently, no multiplayer. That is alluded to in the was it Eurogamer that picked that up? It said that there was no.
It was on the European official website.
Ah, okay.
It said no network play, but I think I mean, you know, I do agree with a lot of your points. I think
despite mocking me viciously,
I knock
earlier.
Everything. So,
glad we're on the same page.
But I think the interesting takeaway though is that hey, it's on PS3. You know, mm-hmm. like this generation is still going on. You know, they're announcing a new IP.
Well, they've been at work on it for 2 years.
Yeah. But I mean, I think it's you know, rather interesting. I mean, the trailer was I didn't realize it was real time when I first saw it. You know, I just assumed that all trailers are CG. And so I was pretty blown away by that, the fact that you know, we have a 6-year-old console
and it's
they're making new games.
I think the thing we kind of keep going back to is like it's Naughty Dog. I mean, they're pretty badass right now. You know what I mean? Like
Zav's argument is, come on,
come on.
Well, I go to Enslaved, which I really loved Enslaved, but I think that you know where Enslaved got let down a little bit was its mechanics. The combat got very rote, and the all the adventuring part because of the like jump to the glowing ledge thing was just push button. You know, even if you were guiding the guy, it was still like. Oh, okay, there's the next push button place to jump to. Okay, I get it. That's where I'm supposed to go to.
It's like Uncharted 3.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Harshness.
Happened. He really is here to snark.
Harshness. Hey, if everything's getting simplified, apparently it also applies to Mass Effect, which judging by that trailer is Shepard running and things blowing up around him and shooting things.
The thing they did not tell you when you're watching that's all connect. You have to run in front of your television. You have to set up a machine, start going like mad. Yeah.
Get to the truck! What the fuck?
That was weird, yeah. That was strange. Yeah.
Oh, no, I hate how like dramatic everything is, and then like it builds up to him pushing a button.
Dr. Pepper's going to pop out. It's all about product placement.
You know what? EA does have a long-standing relationship with the Dr. Pepper people. I'm going to try saying that 3 times.
It's like, oh, man, I was so thirsty.
You know, it was weird. The VGAs did something because it was trying to appeal, I guess, to a more mainstream audience with some of the trailers that, you know, the non-announcements, the things that we were just seeing additional footage of, I felt to be super boring. Like that, I felt to be boring. Yeah. And BioShock Infinite.
Mm.
And not that it doesn't
cool
look good.
Song,
it was, but... It was all stuff we've already all seen. If you're paying attention to it, they've just mashed up a lot of little gameplay pieces. And admittedly, that looks awesome. But for a brand new trailer reveal for us, it was just like, yeah, okay.
I don't want to see more stuff from BioShock.
That is a very good point that a lot of people made when we put the post up.
I agree.
And I think that that's valid for if you don't want it to be ruined. But it's just like that. They made it seem like a bigger deal than it actually was. And it was just like, yeah, I know that we haven't seen that footage in that particular order. But
I think
we've seen a lot of footage.
I think BioShock's actually at that point where they could do like radio silence, and then you know at some point, maybe you know like 6 to 8 weeks before they get to release time, do one of those deals like the movies sometimes do, where it's just like quick cut shit.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh
I
my
want,
god,
man.
Oh my what?
Teasers.
Oh wait, what? Yeah. Oh shit!
And as a mood trailer, I thought it was pretty effective. Mm-hmm.
I think that the reaction to the Revenge of the Jedi thing that happens in it was amazing for the game and their marketing. But imagine if that was the secret. And imagine if that was something you stumbled onto the game. That would be the thing everyone was talking about, like, holy shit, this actually happened. And I hope that there's more of that in the game, obviously. But if it's more of that sort of
concept, I think it'd be disappointing because you're like, yeah, I mean, we've been introduced to this concept already.
Well, from Ken's presentation at E3, don't forget that that was one temporal rift, and evidently the entire city is being torn apart by all these temporal rifts. So I think that that was sort of an alluding to, hey, there could be a lot of crazy shit we could do with this.
Right, but I mean, we've been introduced to the fact that that exists, is my point. Like, that's no longer a secret.
Oh, okay, be prepared to be surprised.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
It's like going up the roller coaster and like, when am I going to go down? When am I going to go down?
But the roller coaster is still awesome.
It's still awesome. Yeah. But, you know, what if, like, you know, you're just cooking dinner and then all of a sudden
you're on a roller coaster! my muffins!
I love how every single time Andrew makes a comparison, it has something to do with food.
You're just cooking dinner. And then you're on a roller coaster, and then lasers.
This is a thing. Yeah, I like it.
That. I like how
that
his mind
awesome.
Works.
I would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
See, now it's funny. We were talking about innovation and all that, and the one that struck me as the big reveal that was not innovative was Epic's Fortnite. Yeah. Because
they made Minecraft.
Well, it's not that Minecraft. It's like
and Left 4 Dead.
And very Team Fortress-y. I mean, obviously, the video they showed was a cartoon-like cinematic, so you can't really read much about the game engine mechanics of it, but you can get this idea of, okay, they're going for a Team Fortress-y look. There seems to be a mechanic.
It looks a little like Brink to me, also.
Sure. Yeah. See that. Also, you know, it has this whole, like, build a fortress. Okay, I get it. Fortnite, F-O-R-T. This is you're building up your fort during one part of the day, and then, like, at night, the zombies attack, and you have to defend yourself.
That's the other thing they took from Minecraft. It's like, mine, and then craft. It's like, it's all there in the title.
That?
Fort, and then night.
But mean, it is an editor's nightmare to write that. Every time I want to correct it. Every time.
Maybe they can make Fortcraft.
Fortcraft.
I think my saying Minecraft, and because that was the Twitter reaction as soon as they showed it. Everyone was like, Epic made Minecraft. I saw that a million times on Twitter. I think that what's great about it is that they're doing something that they haven't done in a long time, which is introduce us to a new franchise that, you know, it's not Unreal. It's not Gears of War. It's not big, burly dudes trying to kill each other. It's like, it's a lighthearted thing. Unreal was always known as the brown engine, you know? Everyone was like, oh, it's Unreal, you could tell because everything's brown. And now
the texture popping.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, they're doing something with their own engine that a lot of people have been doing already, and I think that that's cool, you know?
The thing that people have to realize also is that Minecraft is going to be a genre. It's not going to be... It's not just a game.
You think...
Oh, undoubtedly.
Oh, I disagree.
Really?
Number one, I don't think it can be duplicated. And number two, I think that they are basically already setting the bar, much like a World of Warcraft, to where the why do you try to get into that? Why would you try to fight Minecraft? It's extensible. It's built on.
Terraria is doing all right. And
yeah, why would you fight the PlayStation? You know, why would you make an Xbox? That's dumb. I mean,
why do they keep making MMOs? What's the MMO that you just preloaded? I mean, these all things exist because these other
Star
things
Wars.
Are
that's
really
some Star
successful.
Wars right there. Don't you diss my Star Wars?
Well,
we're not dissing
what?
The Star Wars. It's just
we're dissing the point you just made.
That happens all the time.
I mean, I actually it's valid in the sense that Minecraft is going to be the king of this genre for a long time, as well it should, but
I mean, we skipped right past the EverQuest era and went straight to, like, here's World of Warcraft as far as this genre goes, boom!
Right, but that doesn't invalidate the fact that, you know, UO and EverQuest kind of defined a new genre, and it was,
You know what? Some people might want to play Minecraft with graphics.
It has graphics. They're very endearing. I just think
there's like a huge potential market that's not being tapped right now.
Right, and I think it's naive to think that there aren't a bunch of companies going, let's make that game. Yeah. Let's try to figure out, let's crack that.
I think they're all trying to do League of Legends still.
and Epic has said as much that they drew some inspiration from Minecraft and a few other titles as well. So, I mean, it seems to be... I just like the new direction they're taking. Mm-hmm. I would like for them to do this. That's great. And then Shadow Complex 2 for the hell...
Chair. I mean...
It's Epic. Epic owns Chair. I mean...
Must be happening.
I like Infinity Blade 2. I like Infinity Blade 2. They said that the game's... Didn't they say that the game was essentially almost done or concepted out, but they were looking for a publisher? Why is Microsoft not published? Like, why are they... Wasn't it the most successful Xbox Live arcade game?
You're trying to read the minds of... The Microsoft Hive insanity. Good
luck.
Granted, it probably was really expensive to make. So, probably. In spite of selling like a million copies or whatever, I mean, it still might not have been worth it for Microsoft.
Probably doesn't have enough advertising spots open on the homepage for them for Microsoft after looking at the new dashboard.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know.
So let's see.
What was the other one? What was the last one?
Oh,
there was one more.
Fortnite. The one thing I wanted to come back about Fortnite, was it not you, Jeff, that played there was a social game on the web where you recruited friends to help you, and it was like zombies attacked, and so you like ran around. Did you not play this game? Maybe Ryan O'Donnell's when
you played the Mission Impossible game on Facebook.
And you recruited friends, and it was the same basic idea. It was like you built up your safe house, and you recruited your friends, and then you had to get all inside the safe house at night before the zombies came.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. That was Jeff Mattis was telling us about that.
It was a really cool sounding idea.
Oh, yeah. Project Zomboid.
Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah, we talked about that.
Okay, and as soon as I saw Fortnite, I was like, okay, so it's a first-person shooter version of that.
Yeah.
And what else? We did Mass Effect 3, lots of running. You said it's not an RPG. You don't think it's... Why is it not an RPG simply because it's action-oriented?
If you're looking at that trailer, obviously they're selling a different product than they were selling the first time around. And that's fine if that's where it's going. It just makes me sad. I mean, I was never a huge Mass Effect fan. I know I'm going to get hate mail for this, but I was never a huge Mass Effect... You and I have first time I was ever on a show with you, we had this big, huge argument about the first Mass Effect.
We're going to start right now again!
Yeah, and it was around Christmas time, in fact. I'm not on that train with a lot of people. I think they're fine games. I think they're, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had, especially in the second one. But, you know, I'm just more of a role-playing gamer than I am.
And again, why does that preclude it being a role-playing game? You're going to have character. You're going to have tons of story. You know it's going to have their great conversation system in it.
Right.
So why is it not a role-playing game? Because the combat sequences that they showed you are a real-time action game.
It's not. It's just that what they showed is, look, there's high octane action. You're running around. You're shooting constantly. Yeah. It's not. You know, the first game was sort of like, well, you pause a lot, and you'll assign actions, and that has been streamlined to the point where it's a shooter.
I like Mass Effect a lot, and I think that the RPG part of Mass Effect is just the conversation system, whereas, like, you look at other RPGs, like, and there's customization in terms of the abilities you could select in 2, but they streamlined everything, so it's like, now you don't even have inventory. Like, everyone has, like, or, you know what I mean?
Well, supposedly some of that's coming back.
But... Yeah, they're bringing that stuff back, but that part of it was, like, the other RPG elements in addition to the, you know, dialogue trees, which were great. The second game was a shooter, and they took out a lot of those RPG elements. And it's like, it's still an RPG because you get to make all these choices. It's like, you know, I get to make a lot of choices.
Well, I think a lot of this depends
on other games. Anyways.
I think a lot of this depends on how you're going to define role-playing, because to me, role-playing means that I'm playing the role of the characters in the game. And if I get to choose the conversations and relationships that they build within the network of the story, then I'm role-playing.
Well, I mean...
But
this is just a semantic argument now, because now you're playing, play the role of Kratos, you know? It's like, it's all
you're semantic. Right, God of War is a role-playing game. Come on now! You're like, making it inane. You're jumping.
I did what you did earlier.
I never do that.
Because it tastes.
It tastes delicious.
Why are they fighting?
I just think that you can certainly, if you want to choose to define it that way, what I... agree with Zav is one of the things I like about the genre that's classically known as role-playing games is inventory management.
Sure.
Is, you know, a certain kind of combat that's a little bit different than that. And that's fine. It's fine to just switch things up. But
do you need
a
turn-based combat system to be a role-playing game?
Because, no.
Okay. No, not at all.
You certainly do not need that. It's what I mean, Skyrim doesn't have a turn-based combat
system. I think this circles back to what we were talking about Metal Gear Solid. You know, I'm excited for Rising because, you know, hey, you know what? I'm invested in this world. You know, I enjoyed playing the stealth game. I will want to play an action game. And Mass Effect, I'm, like, so involved in that world. Like, I really enjoyed the RPG element for the first one. But if they're turning that into a third-person shooter straight up, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be there, you know? I want to see how that gameplay change enables them to explore different aspects of the universe. And you know, let's be honest. You know, Mass Effect 3, like, I don't think they could end it any other way, right? Like, it's a galactic war. You're gonna have to be shooting lots of dudes.
I want the ending where everyone just sits down at a conference table and really talks about...
They all go to Yalta. They gather around. let's come to a peace accord.
Is wiping out humanity really a good idea?
If it was Star Trek, they would. Freaking sit down and have a mental exchange with Q, and it's over. Boom. No fighting.
But then what's
no
the currency phasers. System? You've just broken the game.
Andrew, you recently got to see another game that is a departure from its, it's not...
Origins.
Origins, right, in Syndicate.
Origin, I guess.
You know. Oh, yeah. Oh. That got turned into a shooter as well.
It got completely turned into a shooter.
Yeah, it's a great shooter. I mean, I had a blast with it, but it's...
Oh, pun.
Sorry. it's definitely not a strategy game at all. There's I mean, the variety that you get in that is like, how much cooler can you kill guys? You know, how much faster can you kill guys? But other than that, it's not like, I mean, someone pointed it out in chatty actually that it's like during the trailer they're like, and you can solve puzzles, and it's just literally someone pulling on a grate by mashing X a lot.
I love it.
But it's not
the
like
puzzle
XCOM.
Is which part of the body to shoot.
But it's not like XCOM sort of borrows ideas from like the band.
Dude, we don't even know what XCOM is. It's probably changed again
but,
by now.
Yeah, it's true too. But it has like strategy elements baked into sort of the shooters. There's none of that. It's just a straight up shooter.
It's just a straight up shooter.
It's got four player co-op,
and I think
there's a strategy in that. Like, which friend are you going to invite to play with you?
What color's your guy's jacket going to be?
It's a puzzle.
I'm going to go with red this time, guys.
I thought it was really telling when you were hacking into this guy's brain, and like there's like a security system thing that comes up, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be like a hacking minigame, but no, you just hold down like L2 or whatever, and then you're done. I'm like, wait, that's it? And so I asked the EA guy there, and I'm like, well, does it get any more interesting than that? Like, you know, when you meet like higher level guys, so they're like, no. It's like, so is there no way of failing this? He's like, well, I guess you could let go of the trigger while you're hacking.
Well, what if, you know, there's,
amazing.
What if you,
amazing.
You have to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, it's like, oh man, just take it.
Wait, no, this is progress, because in Call of Duty, I think you can actually play through the whole game not pulling the trigger. So here, you know, at least if you let go of the trigger, you might fail.
So, but I mean, as a shooter, it
this
felt
sounds a
really...
lot like Battlefield 3. Oh, you didn't
sad.
Press the button in time.
You're dead.
Now you're dead. You fall over and die of embarrassment.
I was checking out a lot of the Syndicate stuff recently. They have a bunch of videos online. Mm-hmm. And boy, it does look like a great shooter. I love Starbreeze. I think they are very capable developers. It looks like it has a really cool art style.
But it is a good-looking game.
What? What? Why do we need this? I mean, I feel like I'm that today, and I don't want to be that.
I thought
guy,
you loved loving things.
I do love loving things. Something happened.
Who
to me
are
today.
You?
I don't
all right,
know.
Okay. You know, if you really love the world of Syndicate, you know, and you love the strategy game, maybe you want to explore a different side of it, you know, and
this is your Mass Effect argument
make any
again.
Sense.
You can't use the same argument 9 times. Well, as I said before,
I really love that strategy game. You know what I'd love to do is not to have any strategy involved and just shoot stuff.
It's
Syndicate Revenge.
Even if
what's the point? I don't understand.
I can't
the
wait
point.
For the sci-fi movie. The thing that I find sort of troubling with it is that I don't know. Do you even remember Syndicate enough to want to explore more of the world? I mean, when did they come out? It was like 1993, I think. The original Syndicate.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Something
it's like
that.
Even if you remembered loving that game before, I mean, the reason why I would want it to be a strategy game to go against mm-hmm. your point, Andrew, is that yeah, I remember loving that game. Mm-hmm. And I would like to play some more of that game. I mean, adding the name Syndicate to it now, does that really add value?
I don't know
to it?
What the point is.
Though like, I feel like we had this argument when Fallout 3 came out as well.
No. You know, Fallout 3 is still
no, I mean,
a role-playing game.
No, absolutely. But I mean the original when people just noticed that now it's a shooter. Like people had that
but
impression
it's not.
Of it.
I mean
it's different now because Syndicate actually is just a shooter.
Yeah,
though.
Exactly. It's more akin to Shadowrun.
Oh yeah, okay.
You know when Shadowrun was coming out, and I agree with that. And Shadowrun was a pretty interesting little team-based multiplayer shooter for the week that I played it.
Yeah,
you know, and it kind of got stale pretty quickly. But
about 4 days in,
yeah.
Aww.
But what
like cross-platform
I mean, what's the
play?
Point? Like, what's I'm just going to reiterate what you said, Zav. Are there just not enough titles? Are we run out of things of war to call stuff? Or, you know, is it you just need a title and Syndicate's a pretty good one? And
yeah,
maybe
the logo looks really good. I don't know if you've seen the logo.
Well, I think, this is a discussion we have had before, is that there is a publisher reluctance to go with a wholly new, fresh IP that has nothing to tie back to, nothing, no base to build off of, that they completely feel like they're just starting from ground zero.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Starbreeze could have done equally as well, you know, making this cyberpunk shooter game with whatever the creative concept was, and by virtue of them putting Syndicate on it, they are getting more attention.
Sure, but, and quickly, also...
I'm not saying that's a good thing, by the way. I'm not happy about that.
A lot of people are doing this, but if you're EA, do you really want to introduce a brand new franchise this late into the game or bring back a name that people remember?
Oh, you're talking about
in
the
console
cycle. Well,
I don't know how much that has to do with it.
I mean, we did just spend like 20 minutes talking about The Last of Us.
I know. Yeah,
and
I'm saying
Fortnite.
Other people
and
are doing it.
When you see people remember it, it's like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, all right. Well, we won't let you age that long while we take a quick little break. When we come back on the other side, Andrew will wrap up some other titles from the Sony New York event, and we will let Jeff get called out. We have NPDs from November that are in. No surprise there that Modern Warfare 3 was at the top. Actually, no surprise very, very much other than the Xbox 360 being very successful. Hope you'll stick around. We'll be right back on the other side of this. You have won!
Clearly.
And now you get the second half of the show. Starting with Andrew picking up where he was leaving off. Where do you want to go? Journey? I understand Journey has yet another new facelift of graphical beauty on it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean,
it was beautiful at E3.
Yeah, and it's really weird that they made it more beautiful. I don't know. And they're such a small team. I asked them, like, hey, you know, you guys can't be doing this. Like, clearly Santa Monica, like, coming in and helping out, and they're like, no, this is us. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? But no, it really does look amazing. They got, I don't know what they did to the lighting effects, but, you know, it's just really subtle.
So the art style has remained the same.
The art style is the same, but just on a technical level, I mean, just you can see the individual grains of sand, and when your character walks through the sand, it'll actually stick to the clothing now.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's really bizarre. They also showed off what looks like an underwater segment. It's not, but it just looks unlike anything else. I don't know if I actually want to talk about it, because, you know,
okay.
I think that game should be a surprise for people. So,
did they play with the scarf any?
You mean chasing after the scarf, or?
Well, like the way your scarf grows around you to show how much power you have, and
yeah, I mean, I couldn't really see much of that in the build, but, you know, if you played the beta, you sort of
I love that game.
You sort of know how that works. I got hands-on on a lot of Vita games.
Okay.
A lot of Vita games.
And are you excited about the Vita now? One of the questions, actually, that was thrown out to us off of Twitter that I didn't include was whether or not Vita is the last stand for dedicated handheld hardware.
that's a weird question.
Whether or not Vita succeeds being the future of, will people continue to be able to get, you know, success with building Vitas and 3DSs, or will, you know, multi-use devices like iPads or your phone take over and just about be the end of it?
I mean, yeah, it's really hard to figure that out, because, like, I love my dedicated handheld devices. You know, I play a few things on Android once in a while, or iOS, but, you know, I love playing games on handhelds, and I know I'm in the minority there. I think Sony might have a better chance with the Vita than the 3DS, to be honest, because they've been doing the digital stuff for a lot longer than Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with Nintendo, you're still paying like $8 for a downloadable NES game, you know, and that's just not acceptable.
A Mario clock.
or a Mario clock. And
well, can we take a slight detour for a
second?
We
never do that.
And just say, this week, one of the games I've been playing was Pushmo,
mm-hmm.
which is a 3DS downloadable mm-hmm. game. And it's fantastic. It's $7, which is a little steep when compared to other downloadable games on iOS, etc. But, man, it's fantastic. Do you know about this game?
I'm completely ignorant. How'd you get clued into it?
Somebody on Twitter suggested it, and I took a look at it on the whatchamacallit?
eShop.
eShop, yeah. And it's $7, so it's a bit of a leap of faith, but I'm so glad I did. Amy and I were both playing it. It's fantastic. And you're just this little guy, And you have these squares that look like they're made out of Tetris blocks almost. Mm-hmm. And you can pull them out up to three levels deep. Sort of like Little Big Planet, you have three levels of depth. You know, mm-hmm. you can hop. So he can do that. And you can slide them out at three different stages. And they all fit together to form a perfect rectangle. And you have to get to the top. And all the every level the pieces are different, and there's a different number of pieces, and you got to figure out how to pull them to make yourself little stairs or jumping places to get to the top to rescue a little guy who's at the top. Very simple. It's awesome in 3D because it's working on those planes, and the graphics are very colorful and bright and vibrant, and it just pops on the 3DS.
The gameplay reminds me of Catherine without all the adultery.
Yes, it's Catherine done in a way that I find fun. You know, there's no threat, as Catherine constantly has to make a mm-hmm. threat to get you to keep moving up. This is just figure it out, mm-hmm. and there's like 200 levels. It's awesome. Anyway. That was a quick sidebar. I wanted to talk about that game.
No, I mean that. I mean, I've heard good things. I've heard good things about that. But you know, I think there were a lot of great downloadable games on DSiWare as well, and WiiWare, and unfortunately, just people don't talk about that. I don't know if it's you know whose fault that is per se, but you know, I think Nintendo definitely is, you know, less experienced in that regard.
I think it might be our fault.
It's probably
the
our
press's
fault.
Fault.
I don't know. I don't agree with that.
How many times have we sat here talking about a PSN or XBLA game? How many times have we talked about a DSiWare game, other than when Jeff just brought that up right now? Mm-hmm. How many times have you pulled out your 3DS and actually downloaded a DSiWare game?
So here's the struggle I get into with that question is, where does the line fall between their advertising and us covering things that we're interested in and excited and enthusiastic about? Like, I'm not here to advertise games for people. I mean, that's...
No, that's not what I'm saying that we're trying to do.
I think the problem is that the message... Like, it's hard to market these games. And this applies also to PSN and even to Xbox Live, really. Although Xbox Live, I think, probably is the best marketers for a few things because of the boxes that are in your face, but then everything else is completely lost.
Mm. Well, I think Xbox Live has better mindshare amongst people like ourselves just because they were there first.
Okay.
And that's the thing, you know, on the handheld side, you know, Sony has been pushing PSN games on their PSP and whatnot. So.
Yeah, and they also do a better job, to go on the other side of things, of having spokespeople in order to push that stuff out into public mm-hmm. view. And there's Major Nelson, there's a PlayStation blog. There's not really an equivalent for Nintendo. There's a press release they release every week. And that's not, I mean, whoever writes those is probably a nice individual, but I don't know him by his handle. Major Nelson. But I mean, like, you know, I think that that's sometimes it does get lost in the shuffle. That's why I like hearing about little games like that on DSi mm-hmm. where, or like, think about, you know, Wii has Cave Story, a game that thankfully has broke the mold and sort of gotten now with the PC version. Of course, it started as, I think, a little
free
game
on PC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it went to the Wii and I believe DSiWare, and it really...
World of Goo is another example.
It caught some steam, yeah. And then it ended up getting a resurgence on PC. Now there's Cave Story Plus with a bunch of brand new stuff. So,
but there's a lot of games that I think fall through the cracks, and there's some that break... I mean, Lost Winds was a game that I downloaded and played on my Wii. And I think there's certain games that, for some reason... seems more special than others and are have something that to offer and they sort of rise above the fray. But I wouldn't have known that Pushmo would even existed
unless
if I didn't
told you about it.
Have a tweet someone say, hey,
downloadable games, number one, they don't get marketed outside of the distribution space that they live in, which is really tough because they're digitally distributed. So the market is only those people who have access to that channel. And at the same time, though, that's the only people you get marketed. You like very rarely. I'm trying to think, have you seen, you know, even you know, many website ads for digitally distributed games? Maybe a few top tier ones.
Yeah, like you Angry Birds and shit.
But... Yeah, but I mean, you're not going to see like Misplosion Man banner ads on sites. So, and I'm saying like all of those things that it takes to draw people in to build that, you know, that marketing buzz around them, they don't happen. And there's it's just a tough ecosystem to work in. The churn in the digital space is so high.
I was looking back, by the way, same thing. It's difficult to gain a foothold because there's just so much of it. And there's no, I don't have the mental bandwidth to just get on, you know, the E channel or the E shop and browse and see what has come out. I just don't have that bandwidth. I'm not able to just browse PSN every single week. Mm-hmm. Maybe others are, but I'm not.
So what did you see on the Vita, by the way, since we completely sidetracked?
Sorry about that.
That got you hyped for the Vita.
I mean, I'll say it again. Sound shapes. I said that the last time I was on the program.
And I'm in love with it, too.
It's definitely the best reason to have one. I got to play Lumines, which is Lumines. More Lumines. The marketing bullet points that they tried to sell me on were really, really rough.
Does that have back touch?
It does have back touch.
Yeah, it does have back touch. You can tap on the back. It's not... I don't think it's that revolutionary.
Dude, it totally changes the Lumines mechanics, though.
You can build up that meter even without tapping the back.
But if you do tap on the back,
it builds up the meter faster. It's not really... I mean, the back touch really isn't adding much. The meter itself is what's new, you know, the ability to use power-ups during your Lumines playthrough. But the bullet points they were handing me is like, well, now this time the blocks are rendered in 3D. They're actually polygonal blocks. I'm like, it's like, can't you see the lighting like reflecting off of the blocks? I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah, that's why I'm playing this game. Because I asked, you know, like, why isn't this on 3DS, you know? And they're like, well, you know, 3DS can't handle these graphics. I'm like, all right, okay. That's what you're going to be selling me on.
So, mea culpa that my good friend James Milkey is executive producer on the game, and I got to go by Q Entertainment, you know, during TGS. I actually think that them modeling it in 3D is cool, because part of the fun part of the game is the visual presentation, right?
No, it's cool. I just don't think I don't think that's the marketing bullet point. I think the marketing marketing point is, hey, it's Lumines, and it's going to be downloadable, and it has a completely new soundtrack.
And the soundtrack is no more Ray of Light?
There's not a single track that's being brought from the first two games into the new one.
Yeah, and the soundtrack is Milkey going nuts with building the soundtrack for Lumines that he would like.
It sounds like his dream job, right?
Which is kind of awesome-tacular. Yeah.
And you know, for better or worse, you know, I don't know what Lumines fans think, but, you know, it's, like, very focused. It's very, like, focused on electronic music. You know, none of that, like, rock and pop stuff that, like, snuck into Lumines 2. So, you know, it looks great on the Vita screen. I mean, just games look amazing on that screen, just having that OLED screen. I played Rayman on Vita, and it's pretty much the same game as on the PS3 and Xbox. I mean, it just looks that much better on that screen, you know? You're like, I mean, I remember being wowed when I played it on the console on a TV, but then when you have it in your hand, and you're like, shit, this is the same game.
Wow.
And just the colors are just so vibrant on that screen. So it just, I mean, I was just blown away by that.
I have yet to ever see a Vita in person, by the way.
Really?
Ever.
You will be blown away.
It doesn't exist. I'm convinced
very impressive.
This is a really intricate plan to make me look foolish.
I think you will be blown away. I mean, that was the very first thing I ever said about it, too, is that screen, unbelievable.
Although the thing is, now that I have the Galaxy S2, which has that Super AMOLED screen, now that phones have... I mean, during the time they announced Vita and I first saw it, and now, phones have actually progressed so quickly that you know, the screen isn't as impressive, you know? Like, before I was like, oh my god, I'm looking at Jesus. But now, it's like...
Now I can call Jesus on my phone.
Now you're like, oh, now it's just like one of those crazy, things you see in a cupcake. And you're like, oh, that's not really Jesus.
And so, you know, a part of me is a little bit concerned. Because, every time I see the Vita, and my phone keeps on getting better. Or, phones in general keep on getting better. And I'm wondering, you know, the Vita is this beast of a machine right now. But, how quickly will that get... you know, taken over, you know? I just don't know. So that's, where I have some of my doubts. Another one of my doubts, I don't like the Real Touch. Escape Plan, it's a cute game. You know, I think it's... You know, I really like the concept of it, and looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. But just having to do that Rear Touch stuff is just... I can't do it. It's just
tapping on things in the environment to get them to fall over or move or change it. Or pinching the balloons to make them move.
Yeah, pinching is fine, but whenever you have to be accurate, whenever you have to actually point at something and not being able to point at it directly, but from the back, it's just I'm missing, you know? I'm just and the system is huge. That's a 5-inch screen. Mm-hmm. So just having to Rear Touch, I have tiny little girly hands too. So it's just you know, I'm it's like the problem that I had with the original Xbox One controller, where it's like, you know, like I can't reach everything. So I can't do everything.
I'm waiting for Nyko. I'm waiting for Nyko's attachment that puts a little rear-view mirror on the back of the thing so you can just see what you're doing.
It's like the, remember the Game Boy Advance, like, Nyko light, where like you attach it at the top, so it'll be like that.
Exactly.
They made one of those for Neo Geo Pocket too.
But yeah, I mean, the Vita, I think it feels really great. I mean, it's just so incredibly powerful. I think Rayman is actually the best visual thing I've seen on that.
Even more than Uncharted?
More, because like Uncharted, you're just like, well, you know, if you like get really critical about it, you're like, well, the textures are like Uncharted 1, not really Uncharted 3, and like, you know, like but Rayman, you're just like, Rayman, when you look
Uncharted
at it,
1, it looks like garbage.
But no, and it's impressive, but like Rayman, you're just like, this is a painting that has come to life, and you're just like,
it's a beautiful game, and no that, doubt. That and just, a very fun one.
Yeah, and that just makes it.
Does it support multiplayer?
No. So that's one of the reasons why the Vita version sort of gets like knocked down, because there's no multiplayer support at all.
Wow, because that's so much a part of that game.
Yeah, and so that's really surprising. It is surprising. So.
Jeff, you surprised Shadow 13th, and he wants to call you out.
All
you
right,
ready?
Call me out.
So you remember you had made this point last week about not reading wikis and learning too much about games because you didn't want to have them spoiled. You know, you wanted to be like in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So he agreed with you on all that.
Yeah.
But then wanted to call you out about something you said a few weeks back when you said the save function is something in RPGs that you use to go back and forth and try out different influences in the game. He urges you to stop. When you play a game about choice and decisions and consequences, nothing runs more contrary to those concepts than the ability to use godlike powers to see all the ends. Next time you play a game, an RPG, try and do it pure. And I promise you, the experience will be enriched.
Well, that's an interesting challenge. I definitely gain a lot of joy from the use of saves and having a save there and knowing that I can risk without any worry. But I also haven't brought this game up in a while. Loved my playthrough of Heavy Rain because I was invested. I couldn't just go back and, you know, pull up my save. So that's an interesting challenge to just say go through and don't rely on saves. I don't know if it will actually be that much of a different experience, and I think I would lose a little of the joy that I find in, you know, in taking a moment and going, oh, well, there's this crazy thing I could, let me just leap off this ledge and just see what happens. Oh, I died. Okay, well, that was good. I didn't have to worry about, you know, I had saved right beforehand.
Right. It's also a big difference between Heavy Rain, which is a couple of hours, and like Skyrim, which is 150 hours. That,
yeah,
you know, you make that decision, and you're like, I really wish I didn't do that. Sometimes you're experimenting because you want to see what's best for you in that situation because there's customization involved. Whereas in Heavy Rain, it's a story that's unfolding.
That's one of the big things is putting a talent point into something and then trying it and going, oh, well, that's not I thought it was going to do.
They're not really great with the descriptors in that game either.
So. Or even like a dialogue choice or something in like a BioWare game where, and it'd be interesting to see because Star Wars, obviously, you can't go back. But sometimes it's not clear what choice you're making. If you're just, like, your two choices are, you know, I will or, you know, I'd rather not or something like that. And it's like, well, if I...
You know, sometimes choices in life aren't really clear like that.
No. But I think the greatest example of that is L.A. Noire, where, like, you know, you hit the, the harsh option, and you're like, no, I didn't want to accuse them of murder.
Exactly.
And Cole always looks like he's going to punch someone or shoot them in the foot to make them talk.
Why'd you kill your own son? I'm like, no, I wasn't thinking that.
Yeah, precisely. That happens to me a lot in that game. Where it's like I would like to point out that you know this piece of evidence, and then all of a sudden
it's so extreme. Yeah, it's like,
whoa! I didn't realize you were gonna
because it's all mechanics, and so exposing the mechanics of a game is one of the things that does definitely undermine the immersion in the narrative and the fiction. Going back to your thing about min-maxing, there was a lot of discussion around that. Sister Infin said this about the idea of min-maxing. For me, it's all about the origin of the phrase in D&D. Min-max is an expression that sums up someone's intention to master the mechanics and forget about the game. You aren't playing anymore, you are competing. In D&D, people got so concerned with having the most powerful characters and never failing a roll, as in a roll of the dice, that they forgot about the role-playing, R-O-L-E now, part of the game. Those players won the second they had finished creating their characters, and so the actual game sessions became a foregone conclusion that drove many a poor GM to madness and message boards. How much does that impact this decision? I mean, how much do you think that you pull away from your game by sitting here going, oh, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try that, I'm going to try that, I know the mechanics, I'm gaming the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly the point I was trying to make.
But you were doing it. But yet you find yourself pulled to do that.
You mean referencing the save game thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's a little bit apples and oranges. I think it's a little bit, I mean, I can see the correlation that's being made, but I think it's a little bit different of going, well, I'm still playing and now I'm going to try something outside the box and go back if it doesn't work. Whereas this is literally, I just recoil at the idea that there is a right way to do something. And by min-maxing, it's like, well, you know, if you want to be on our team to go fight the monster, you better have this certain build of your character because that's the right way to play them, or, you know, all this
that's
stuff.
That's a very WoW point of view.
Yeah.
I mean, now you're talking about a very competitive arena.
Or even, you know, I was just having a conversation yesterday about somebody who was like, oh, yeah, I went on and looked at some website's how-to guide in Skyrim about how to level up my X skill by doing X, Y, Z. Really, and I was like, you would never have done that if you didn't look up that thing. It just feels like it infringes upon the experience that you were going to have. And it didn't help you out. Like, having that skill three levels higher doesn't enrich your experience. It doesn't, I don't know.
Did it? It might have enriched their experience.
Unless,
I mean, now we get back to that whole question we had last time about, like, is there a right or wrong way to play the games?
Well, and that's I should preface all of this, as I did last week, by saying I'm the last person to begrudge anybody their play style. If you're having fun min-maxing, that's I just don't like it when it imposes on me. When someone, you know, all of a sudden is like, well, you shouldn't have been doing that because you could do this, this, that. It's like, well, okay, but that's not how I'm having fun. That's not my fun. My fun isn't playing a spreadsheet and figuring it out. My fun is experiencing that experience the way I'm going to do it.
And if you don't like the experience that you've had, you can go back to that save file and make another decision.
Yeah.
Personally, I enjoy just playing it once through without really, like, you know, like, the temptation's always there. Like, oh, what if, like, I can't, you know, like, what if this is the wrong choice? But then afterwards, I love breaking it down. You know, it's sort of like watching a movie and then, like, once you're done with it, going to the special features on the DVD and being like, oh, that's how they made that scene. Mm. Like, I enjoy, like, breaking games once I experience it the way that I feel like it was meant to, or, you know, the way I want it to. I think it's really smart when developers give you the feeling. I think the big problem is when developers give you the feeling that, like, your choices don't matter, or, like, they matter too much. I think Mass Effect actually has the greatest balance of that, where, like, you don't really actually have that many choices. Like, if you think about it, three games, they play the same. It's just you make these minor choices, but they feel like amazing choices, you know? And, like, you don't... They feel like they have that consequence, and
I don't know.
That's the thing.
That's interesting that you bring up Mass Effect, because I'm just thinking about this for the first time, but to prove myself a hypocrite, as I often do, I feel like the structure of Mass Effect plays into that feeling of min-maxing in me that I often go, well, if I'm either going to be Paragon or... Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one... They put a polar meter in there.
Exactly.
So that draws you right to that in the first place.
And even more than that, they put achievements of, like, getting to a certain level of your Paragon. So now I'm like,
well,
what's the
point? And then
they stack
it to where if you want the best... It goes back to, you know, KOTOR. If you want the best dark side powers, you have to go all dark.
All the way.
If you want the best light powers, you have to go all the way light.
So I start choosing my moments only to maximize that outcome rather than playing the role. And I think that's a situation where the structure of the game is already working against my ability to sort of set that aside.
No, I do agree that games with a morality system generally fail to give us a gray, you know? Like, once you decide to be good, you have to be good all the way, because, you know, if you only half-ass your goodness, then you're only getting... Right. Half-assed,
but that's
good,
only
good
games.
Powers, you know?
That's only games that are structured to have a binary morality system. There's so many wonderful, and even in the same company with the Dragon Age series, it's so interesting when you have these decisions that there's no decision to be made that doesn't mess somebody up and help somebody else. So you have You have an actual decision to be made.
But a game engine is not sentient, and so ultimately...
Why not? Let's get that.
The best you can do is hope that somehow or other they've taken into account all these multitude of factors so that as you progress through the game, you've established this precedent of, okay, I'm really handing down a good point of view. But eventually, maybe there are a few things I need to do that are a little, yeah, I don't know, sketchy, questionable, on the gray side. And that's obviously was something that the guys behind The Witcher and The Witcher 2 were very interested in, right? Mm-hmm. Is trying to paint that, like, that, hey, you know, morality is oftentimes all in the gray, and it's very hard to find a pure white or a pure black.
I think that's much more interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just much, much more interesting storytelling.
It's just very difficult because, again, the engine is not thinking about any of these things. All it can do is take all the variables that are presented to it and say, okay, well, Mr. Kanata, you've done this, 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 and this, and weighed against this, this, and this. We've just decided to give you a negative 0.2 on your good side because you chose this dark action.
I mean, that's the goal. I mean, from the very inception of video games, the goal has been to recreate the tabletop Dungeons & Dragons experience, right? That was the that was where video games came from, is... You know what would be great is if we didn't need a dungeon master. Let's let the computer do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're all striving for, or what these designers are striving for, is to create a completely reactionary experience that's like having a dungeon master, where it's like your story is unique to, or it's crafted, but it deals with your decisions moment to moment in a way that is completely suited to what you did.
Well, then, how about this? Let me draw this... draw this little conversation up in a package with Captain Loco's comment that I dislike min-maxing because ultimately it comes down to a math problem. Once that problem is solved, it hurts character diversity and thereby makes the game list interesting to me because if there's only going to be a few viable character builds, I'd just as soon have the game build my character for me.
Yeah.
And if that's the sort of world that you're talking about, it does then, of course, have that knock-on effect. Mm-hmm. We will be right back in a minute. We will talk about some of the most popular games that you bought according to the NPD sales numbers. We'll talk a little bit about Game of the Year stuff. Jeff Kanata will tell us about Trine 2, which he's been playing on his beautiful PC. I'm still waiting for mine. Can't wait for it to get here.
Exciting.
Because I got some Star Wars to play. Got some Star Wars to play. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. I'm going to play it for a little while.
So say we all.
That wrong series.
Damn it.
Wrong series. Live long and prosper.
Ah, that's the right one.
Exactly. We'll be right back.
The internet has got girlfriends. There's such a culture of how far did you get? I got the maximum. The level of chaos, it's too much. Chaos. I'll play with three as well.
Lowercase r regret.
It's too much.
Lowercase r regret.
The sweet spot's two. Capital R. Capital R. Romantic.
I'm an all caps romantic.
Internet has. Capital R. Romantic.
Internet has.
Capital R. Romantic.
Very appropriate for today.
Yeah.
But with all of us having our girlfriends here.
It is kind of a collection. It's amazing. Awesome. Happy day. Hey, by the way, if you are out there and are not already, follow us on Twitter at Weekend Confirmed, at Shack News, at Jeff Kanata for Jeff, at Zav for Zav D'Amatos, at...
Don't try. Don't worry. It's okay.
SCXZOR for Andrew Yoon.
It's a Pokemon.
Yeah, there you go. And of course, I'm Garnet Lee. And let us go into the NPDs. No real surprises there. Modern Warfare 3 took the crown. Big, shocking surprise. It's big. They're now even like, it did so well that Jeep decided, oh, well, I guess we'll advertise the Modern Warfare Jeep this time.
Yeah.
That's kind of bizarre.
Crazy.
We don't really have anything to say about that, do we?
Yeah.
Rest of the top 10 rounded out Skyrim in the second slot. Of course, keep in mind that the NPDs are only retail box sales in North America at participating retailers, so it doesn't have digital sales at all. Battlefield 3, Assassin's Creed Revelations, and Just Dance 3 rounding out the top 5. Then Madden coming in at 6th. Uncharted, Saints Row, Zelda, and The Batman.
One thing that I thought was interesting about these NPDs is that because they combine all platforms in one top 10 list, so it used to be in the original NPDs, it would be like PS3 outsold 360 yeah. version. They said that if they did the list like that still, two games that would have made this list, Super Mario 3DS, Super Mario Land 3DS,
that's
and
cool.
Halo Anniversary Edition
Wow,
would have been in the top 10 if they were doing the list that way.
Still, but platform-specific.
Platform-specific.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I can imagine why they would do well with Halo, because 1.7 million Xbox 360s sold in November. And a significant number of them on Black Friday, according to Mage. What was that? It was some
800,000 within 800,000 within a 48-hour period, I believe.
Ladies be macing.
Like, what's going on with 360?
Yeah, that was the lady who
you maced. For a 360. Yeah.
She ended up getting it, too.
Of course she did.
Yeah,
that's
she
dedication.
Maced someone without getting one, then I don't know.
I want that damn Xbox 360.
Yeah.
I gotta just dance.
You gotta just dance.
You know, it's interesting because...
What game she wanted.
In prior generations, Sony was the one who was in the lead position, and to continue stimulating sales, they really relied on price reductions, and they'd do great price reductions, and then you'd see a new spike in sales, and they got great spikes. I mean, they got much bigger spikes than what Microsoft has seen, but Microsoft has kind of taken this different approach of, okay, well, we added Kinect, and we do our marketing up differently, and we bring in, you know, a whole new set of television and video apps, which are obviously very popular right now. We just saw these new stats about how many people are watching video through their Xboxes, but they haven't really slash the price on the thing.
Actually, there was a study, I think last month, that showed that the average price of the Xbox actually has
rose.
Been going up. Yeah.
Yeah. They haven't gone to making $149.99.
Resorted
to, yes.
I think as someone who is an early adopter, that is a much more interesting approach for me. Give me more services.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand wanting a price drop. Certainly, for non-
I just wonder how much more audience would open up, and reasonably, how much longer is this console cycle going to continue? I mean, we must be getting close to announcements. I think
I
mean, this CES year. Is premature. Andrew says no.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I mean, games.
You don't think that it's premature, or you don't?
Oh
think
no, I just don't think they're going to announce it anytime soon. I just think Microsoft is going to be the one that's going to announce it before anyone else, and they're just riding this wave of success. Why would they want to prematurely terminate this? You know,
so you don't
generation?
Buy into the argument that Sony feels like they got burned last time and is going to beat Microsoft no matter what the cost?
I mean, the thing about Sony is that the R&D just killed them, and as a company, as you know, not just PlayStation, but as a company, they're struggling so much that I don't think they're going to invest as much on R&D in order to, like, push out a system earlier than anyone else.
Do you think Sony could make a crazy right turn and go for budget hardware this time?
Well, I think they can make I think that they very much could make a crazy right turn. I don't know that would be budget hardware.
I mean, in this sort of the Wii model of
offering
something that undercuts price-wise the other two.
I would imagine that is a very real conversation that must go on there because, look, they went high-end hardware. They went cell architecture.
I think if they wanted to, though, the Vita wouldn't have existed. I think
good point.
I think the company mentality is like, this is what PlayStation...
Still bleeding edge.
Yeah. Like,
do you think they're committed to Blu-ray in their next console cycle?
Blu-ray is not going to cost them anything. So it's the question, like, are they going to keep Blu-ray or are they going to move to a new format? Like,
yeah,
is that
I mean, there's
question?
Not. I guess there's not really any new format other than pure digital distribution.
Yeah,
which they're not prepared.
Yeah,
to go.
I mean,
they'll still have a physical media. The question is whether
so
or not
much back. Yeah, because of the whole Blu-ray, them being a part of that conversation in that hardware space.
Yeah,
that they are reliant on that. The question that I think a lot of people are saying, I think it may have been Michael Pachter or another analyst was saying that like the next Xbox. Which I'm really, can we just stop calling it the 720?
Yes.
Like, I know, it's great that you do math, guys. Come on. But, like, I don't, it's annoying. And I just think that, you know, the analyst was saying, sorry, that they need to have Blu-ray in their next console.
That's what I was going to say.
That's what I was saying.
Is Microsoft going to add Blu-ray for physical media to theirs is really the question, right?
I mean, I'd be surprised if they didn't, to be honest.
I think it's a great case. I think it's a great, you know, case of brinksmanship playing out right now because, you know, Sony really doesn't want to get caught behind again. I mean, they don't want Microsoft to get a noticeable first mover advantage, and they certainly don't want to get caught in another situation where Microsoft gets out there first, and then they have to come along and say, "Oh, we've got something coming," and then you know it's got six cells and an NVIDIA chip from the last version of video cards, and it's gonna be awesome. You'll love it.
I think holiday 2013 is really
It's going to be talked about this summer.
Exactly. I think so.
Yeah. I mean, here's a really silly, stupid question, but I'll pose it anyway. The argument for PS2 in DVD was now you have a cheap DVD player. PS3 was now you have a cheap Blu-ray player.
Yep.
The advent not so cheap.
Well, yeah, now it is, but at the time, no, it wasn't.
No. Actually, at the time, $5.99 was still a cheap.
I suppose it was.
Now you have a Blu-ray player. They ain't that many.
Okay. But with the advent of things like Netflix and Hulu and all of these applications, is this still an argument for the next console? Does it need to have Blu-ray because it does those other functions, or is it for a capacity reason? And if it is a capacity reason, and this is where it's, I don't know, technology, so I'm guessing, could they just create their own specific disc format? Do they need to use Blu-ray?
I think it would
could
be cheaper.
Could they use HD DVD? You know what I'm saying?
Like it would be cheaper for them to license Blu-ray.
Laserdisc.
They have all of those machines, right? I'm sure.
It would be cheaper for them to license Blu-ray than to develop another, you know, optical media format from scratch.
And Blu-ray is not specific only to Sony, right? Isn't it also Samsung and a couple of other companies? It's a rather large consortium.
And I remember Windows 7 ads where they're like, you know, remember, only Windows 7 supports Blu-ray because Mac OS X doesn't. So, you know,
but my question
like a
is,
bullet point for them.
But my question is for the next generation. It's only a capacity issue at this point.
And it plays in Walmart. Blu-ray plays in Walmart. You walk into a Walmart electronics department and there's
also
a ton of Blu-ray player. And oh, by the yeah, Xbox play Blu-ray.
If you really care about PQ, you're not watching HD movies over Netflix and not seeing a difference between that and Blu-ray. Blu-ray is
true,
substantively different than
absolutely.
But I mean, people do have Blu-ray movie libraries.
But this is Microsoft's focus now. They've announced a bunch of new applications for their Xbox 360 because that is an added value to their customers. They haven't announced a Blu-ray player.
Right.
Like they did an HD DVD player because they were a part of that argument at the time.
Right. Yeah, and well, that argument, that they didn't win that argument.
Oh, no, they failed miserably.
Yeah, is that not clear now that was definitely tactical maneuvering to
continue? It was only done to delay.
It was distraction for Sony and a tactical maneuver to prolong that.
But
argument.
I mean, I just
passing
think,
those savings along to you.
I mean, this, so, you know, in terms of next generation, I'd be surprised if all of the next gen systems didn't use Blu-ray.
I want Microsoft to go to UMD. I hear that's bustling.
Zav, and following on our conversation last segment about math equations, Zav did a little math as well because Sony did not provide us numbers for their PS3
sales. Can I tell
this
story?
Sure.
I love this story where we asked, because Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo reacted to the NPD numbers. Microsoft and Nintendo released the numbers for their actual sales. Sony said, oh, we're not going to release numbers, but we did 70% better than last year. So I was like, all right, last year we knew the number, so I did the math, so we know the number, the average number. I just think it was funny where like they wouldn't, because it sounds better to say we did 70% better than we did last year, which equals to 900,000 units, or about 910,000 units, whereas Microsoft sold 1.7 million units of the Xbox 360.
That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's
almost double.
It's still a big difference. And that's not poo-pooing on PlayStation. We know PlayStation's doing well in Europe and does great in Japan, but still, like, the American marketplace... completely bizarre. And they have great bundles. They have great bundles for
that's
the holiday
what they're
season.
Doing. They have tactical bundles and they have them specific to retailers and they have them that work very, I mean, Kinect still does very well. Now you can buy a Kinect that comes with three games and it pushes their digital market because two of them are on Xbox Live Marketplace.
I mean, yeah, Microsoft's marketing machine is just so much smarter in this regard. I mean, what's the last PS3 bundle they announced? The Harry Potter bundle, which, you know, includes Harry Potter, the newest one, like, you know,
the
book
movie.
7, yeah, part 2 on Blu-ray 3D. And I'm like, well, if you're gonna have a Harry Potter bundle, like...
it should come with a Patronus. Am I right, guys?
It should, well, go, like, all the way. Like, you know, like, make it so that there's something about it that's unique that collectors want. You know, that Lego and that the Star Wars Xbox 360, which didn't make it this year, when that comes out, you're going to see another surge of Xboxes. You know?
Maybe they held it because they're like, fuck, this shit's going to sell. Let's hold this until we need it, guys.
All right, enough about NPDs. They're really not all that interesting. And I think we've done plenty of sales foo. What do you guys think?
I agree.
Good with that? One of the topics that has come up a number of times, and by the way, if you're wondering about our holiday plans, we're recording two shows next week. We'll be recording a regular show for next week. Well, it's sort of a regular show. It'll be we're going to do a holiday party show, which we're going to play next week. And then we're going to do like a game of the year slash favorite moments of the year slash stuff we're looking forward to sort of show to run between Christmas and New Year. And one of the topics, of course, that'll come up will be Game of the Year. And on that subject, a number of you have called us out about Skyrim because many of you have experienced a number of technical difficulties with the game. Mm-hmm. Fair complaint. Sister Infant said, articulated this for many of you, says, so before you guys dish on your Game of the Year type discussions, I'd love to hear some discussion on what, if any, knocks Skyrim takes for essentially being broken on the PS3, and that at the time of your deliberations, the worst of the issues is still not resolved. And the latest attempt to fix the issue caused more issues. Do you even consider something that has a broken version out there for Game of the Year? Or does the game get a pass on the issue since the Xbox and PC versions have fewer game-breaking issues and at least workarounds? And it is still only fewer.
It's a big deal.
You made a great point outside about this, Jeff, earlier. And
well, it's a shitty point.
It's a shitty point.
I have a difficult time weighing those things when they don't affect me. I haven't had any issues, and I've put in many hours into Skyrim, and I have had little humorous things that have happened here or there, but I haven't had anything game-breaking. Yes, I'm not playing on a PS3, and if I was, I would probably be furious. I know I was furious at, was it New Vegas? I think it was New Vegas.
It was probably, trust me, it was probably.
I had a bunch of problems with it. I feel like it's unfair of me to hold this position, but the problem is that I have had such a positive experience with the game, and I haven't encountered anything that broke my experience. I need to take that into account. I think that's very valid, and it's very troubling that if you own a PS3 as your console and you want to play Skyrim, it's trouble. It's problematic.
I mean, I think, if Skyrim does become Game of the Year, you'd probably just say it's the Xbox 360 and PC version of Skyrim that's winning Game of the Year. That's the disclaimer,
And
the PS3 problem is surmountable. You simply have to stop playing after an hour and reset and start over.
That's rough, man.
Rebooting.
That's unacceptable.
You worked in Windows?
That's a lot. I mean, like, come on. It's like when you play a Wii, or what was it, Metal Gear, or what was the game? It might have been Metal Gear 4, where they would recommend you take breaks. Was it Metal Gear?
That's every Nintendo game.
Or every Nintendo game, yeah. I don't know why I'm thinking Metal Gear did this, but yeah, they like recommend you take breaks after a certain amount of time.
That's just enforcing that rule.
Is that what Bethesda is doing with the PS3 version?
I think, it seems like Skyrim probably got pushed out there a bit too early. And you see that in the movie industry as well. You have, movies trying to, make it to the Oscar cutoff point where they're going to release on December, 30th in order to, make the Oscar cutoff. But no one would have the right mind to, submit an unfinished game to the Oscars, You're not going to be like, all right,
it would be weird to submit any game to the Oscars.
It would be kind of weird.
That's an unfinished film to the Oscars. You're not going to have, this scene isn't finished, and you're gonna have the animatronics, green screens and stuff like that. You're not gonna.
I don't know. I've seen some shitty ass unfinished
And they're not gonna win.
I think in the case of Skyrim, it was, hey, we have this awesome release date that we scored, guys. 11/11/11. We need to release this bitch.
Yeah. I don't know. It sucks, but I have a hard time putting a lot of weight behind those problems just because I haven't experienced them.
I mean, should the games media not have criticized Xbox because, some people didn't get Red Ring of Death? I actually have a launch system that didn't die. So,
yeah. I would think that you'd be less impacted by those reports because for you, I can only speak subjectively. Right? I recognize that it's shitty if you want to play this on the PS3 and you have all these problems. I recognize that. But I'm awarding my personal Game of the Year based on the experience that I had. And I do need to weigh that stuff in more, perhaps. But it's hard for me to do that because I'm informed by my own experience. You know what I mean?
I think the question that I have the most trouble, or the reason I have the most trouble with this question, is that I think people who listen to me know this about me, is that I'm much more interested in the design and character and response and artistry of the game than I am of the technical mechanisms by which it comes to me through a box and a controller.
Yeah, but there's one thing to say that, another thing where you can't play.
I'm not arguing that. I'm saying that this is why I struggle with the question, is because I'm much more interested in the ideal of the concept and the content than I programmed the zeros and ones and made it push through the system and work.
So
and
your game of the year is the Dead Island trailer.
Yeah, I mean,
or
I understand what you're saying.
Any given Peter Molyneux talk.
Right, no, I totally get what you're saying, and that's why I love those things. And then, of course, that's why, you know, Dead Island to me was a huge disappointment, because, like, you know, I could never get out of my mind that I wanted it to be more than what it was. And what it was fun. I mean, it was still kind of cool and fun. It just wasn't where they had set the bar for me. And the Peter Molyneux games have the same problem. Yeah, I mean, in a real, objective, hardcore, like, can you make Skyrim the game of the year if it has all these problems? There's a pretty good argument that you can't. I mean, I think there's a very valid argument that, hey, look, the shit don't work, and it's not finished, and it has a lot of problems. And then at the other hand, you know, this is the argument we had a couple of three shows ago about, like, I don't want to tell those guys that you suck or that it discouraged them, because I don't even know how you enter into making a game of that scope and think how you're going to possibly beta test it for a hard release date. I mean, look at what WoW went through when it came out.
But then that's you giving them a pass on sticking to a hard release date. Like, at a certain point, you either step up to the plate and say, you shouldn't have put your game out like this, guys. Or you say, there's a certain acceptable level of unfinished that we're going to overlook.
You know what might be an interesting solution?
And I think it is finished, but not polished, maybe. I mean,
interesting
if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Minecraft came out, you know, unfinished, quote unquote, and it's only being considered, you know, this year because it is finished, quote unquote, or it's, you know, released.
Put themselves in a unique position.
Skyrim, why don't you just wait until the Game of the Year edition next year before considering it for Game of the Year?
You say that facetiously, but it is actually
But Minecraft was released with them intentionally saying, like, this is not a finished product.
Yeah, this is a beta.
You know
and
what?
There were going to be issues.
If you've played any Bethesda game before this,
you know that they don't actually release games
completely, all right? You know that when you buy a $60 game getting an incomplete game.
To Jeff's
game.
Point, too, it's like, okay, I didn't get any glitches that ended my experience. And you know what? I played a Witcher and I didn't have any problems. But there was a guy who maybe the game froze on him because that guy had that experience. Does that now mean that I need to seriously weigh that into my option? Like, I understand the game is fucking broken on PS3 and they tried to fix it and it broke more. I did not have that experience when I played it on PC myself. And yeah, it's a conversation we need to have, obviously, and I'm looking at Garnet now, about how we're going to deal with these situations with this entire scenario when we do our Game of the Year in January.
On the flip side, I remember talking about, was it Dragon Age? The first Dragon Age on my show, and people being furious that I had the gall to talk about it on the 360 and not play it on the PC. You know, it's like, well, it's out on the 360. Right. You know, that's the experience that I had. That's the copy they sent me. I played that one. So that's the experience I had. I can't speak to... And everybody was like, well, that's not the right way to play. You got to play it on the PC.
That argument.
You're doing it wrong.
Right.
Doing it wrong.
I don't know. It's a conundrum, you know? It's difficult to say, you know, maybe there's a responsibility that we have to hold them to task and say, you put this game out on the PS3, it's got to work in order for us to laud you and give you accolades. But at the same time, the experience that I had playing that game on the 360 is the best experience I had all year of playing a video game. Yeah. So I'm stuck.
And back to my experience thing, I love the experience.
And the way that we're doing our Game of the Year check is everyone on staff gives us their top games of the year based on their experience, and we have a weighted system that decides what that Game of the Year is going to be. It could be Skyrim. It could be a number of other games. It could be The Witcher. It could be, you know, it could be Portal 2. Other games that I'm sure people have had issues with too, obviously not to the extent of Bethesda's game or games, perhaps, Andrew. But it is something that we do need to consider. And
since, by the way, since we haven't voted yet, there's still time to get one more release in.
Get some games out there.
I mean,
one more release
Star Wars?
No.
No, we're not considering it.
Trying to.
Oh, yeah.
Star Wars, we're going to consider Star Wars
next year.
Because it's so very late in its MMO.
And you got to play a lot of it.
It's beat our cutoff, I guess you can essentially call it.
But you got trying to.
I have trying to.
How much have you played? Should we like give you a tease? We'll talk
we
about
can talk
next
about
week?
It next week if you guys want to. It's fantastic. If you like the first one as much as I did, which is a lot, it's beautiful, beautiful art style. The art style is just absolutely
first one was
stunning.
Beautiful too.
Yeah, I think it looks even better.
Also, best 3D game I have ever played.
Oh, because you're using the NVIDIA gear on it.
On the PC is perhaps the best 3D game I have ever played.
Jealous.
So good.
Yeah, we can talk about it more next week, but it is it's a special game. It's really, really fun.
All right. So without any further ado then, let's go to the finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
Andrew, since you are our part of the Shaq News team, but since you're here special, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, wow. All right. I got a chance to try On Live on Android earlier last week. It's interesting, to say the least.
What'd you play?
I played almost every game that they had available, just see if anything would work. And, I mean...
a ringing endorsement.
No, I mean, it is amazing. I am amazed that you know, I could see Lego Batman like on my phone, or you know, I could see Dirk 2, and yeah, you know, I could see these games and theoretically,
and you're using the verb see.
Theoretically interact with them.
wow.
Theoretically interacting. All right, Einstein, how did that go?
And I couldn't help but think like this is a technological accomplishment. It's like, you know, it's like the Large Hadron Collider. You know, it's like they are going to see that Higgs, whatever, proton thing. They're going to see it. It's going to be amazing.
Not if future people don't sabotage it.
They're going to see it. It's going to be amazing.
Happening.
And then once you see it, it's like, all right. That's how I felt about online. Like, wow, this is amazing.
I will say that I played Dirt. You said that you were good at Dirt. You actually...
I actually finished the
you
race.
You finished
yeah.
the race.
Yeah.
I flipped my car on a straightaway. Not even in a turn. I flipped my car on a straightaway. Because it's on-screen controls, and there's 19,000 virtual buttons.
Oh, boy.
It's really...
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much a, you know, hit against on live, but it's just on touch controls.
But by the way, have you seen my phone? Check out what I can do.
Yeah.
I mean,
I played the intro video of Deus Ex on my phone. And if I happen to bring my Bluetooth controller with me, I'd be able to play it. Because that's the only way you can play that game on Android. It doesn't have on-screen commands.
I mean, yeah. I mean, but the concept, like, you know, the more you think about it, like, as cool as it is, then you realize that the future, like, if OnLive continues this way, it's like, you have your phone and then you're carrying this giant, like, wireless controller in the back of your pants.
Of course. You don't travel like that?
And you're setting it on your table and you're just like, you're just, you know, it seems ridiculous. I mean, it's amazing.
Imagine how the text options on Deus Ex would be on that phone.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
I mean, it's amazing. I just don't know if... I mean, it's amazing, but that's it.
And that's that. Zav, your finishing move?
I would also, echoing the last time I was on the show, like to apologize for a mistake that I've made, and Mr. Kanata here has shown me the way. I've been playing some Minecraft. And when I say some, I mean a lot of fucking Minecraft.
It kills me that we didn't play together yet.
We're going to. You have to show me how the multiplayer works, because me and Steve, who's doing the review for Shaq, we're having a ton of problems with it. But it is fantastic. I love it. And it's, all the assumptions I had about it kind of got thrown out the window. Lick Chan, who's a listener to the show, I said I was going to talk about Minecraft. We didn't really get to it, but he groaned and I said, oh, have you played? And he said, no, I saw some videos. I'm like,
exactly,
well, that's what I did and didn't realize what it was.
Yeah.
Check it out. You can play a free version of it on Minecraft.net. I think there's a browser-based version you could check out. It's really addictive. I've actually got to the point where I downloaded the Android version and I was like, and I was checking it out. It's horrible. The Android version is horrific. It's the worst. But they're going to update it, and hopefully it'll get better.
It sounds like Android.
It's awesome.
Oh,
I'm
but
so glad
you should
liking.
Mention that there is an Xbox version in the works as well. So.
Yeah, for Kinect.
Yeah, I mean...
It was announced at E3. Someone asked that question.
You know, I just didn't want to ignore whoever that was.
Oh, yeah, Muse Thomas asked if it's coming out on consoles. It's coming to 360, I think, as an XBLA game with Kinect support.
First half of next year, I believe, is the target date.
Awesome. Check it out. Minecraft.
Jeff Kanata.
Coming up on the holidays, no better time to play a board game with your family. Thought I'd give us a fun board game to talk about. The big new hotness of 2011, as we're getting to the end of it, was a game called Quarriors. I finally got a chance to play it. I've been itching to play it. Finally played it this week. So there are these games called deck-building games. They were started kind of with Dominion. This is not like Magic the Gathering or other games where you build a deck by buying cards. These are games where the building of a deck happens in the context of playing the game. You play as you build. You build as you play. It's a bunch of Dominion was a huge, massive hit. It's an excellent game, by the way. A great starter game, too, if you've never played designer board games. Dominion, awesome. But this mechanic has been adopted by a lot of people. It became kind of the new hotness for a while. And Quarriors is taking that mechanic and bringing it to dice instead of cards. So it's a dice-building game.
What?
So you're assembling an army of creatures that are represented by dice, and you roll those creatures, and you can do certain things. You can buy other creatures. You can keep assembling this army until you have very powerful sets of creatures as represented by dice. It's really fun. The art style is really cool, and it earns all of the accolades that it's gotten so far. It's really become a very popular game for 2011, and I had a great time playing it. So I recommend it.
Awesome. And mine's just another shout-out to the Four String League guys that I'm still playing my Madden 12 online franchise with. I honestly did not realize the football role-playing game that I was getting into by joining this league. Remember, we like once upon a time had to talk about sports games with role-playing elements?
Yeah.
Well, like, that's what this has become. This has become a role-playing game. If you're super into football, and I'm sure it's the same way in FIFA and in NHL for people who play those online franchises. But we've just got to our first offseason. You know, I was talking about all the stuff I had to do. Well, now I've had to go through and much as you see teams do during the offseason, like look at guys who had contracts I was paying too much, drop players that I really didn't want to drop because I'm not under the salary cap. I'm making trades and making trades in consideration not just for a guy that I want, but also for, well, if I get rid of this guy but get a guy who's a lower salary at this position, then I can cut this guy.
Doesn't sound like a role-playing game. It sounds like a strategy game.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like it's almost like a tactical art. It's almost like a Pokemon game.
I was going to say it sounds like a dating sim.
It's sort of that way, too. So last step, we're to the last phase now, which is free agency, and we have to bid for free agents. And so the funny thing is that it's all very cool, but one of the lessons that I'm surprised that well, I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised because people talk crap on EA Sports all the time, is that a lot of the stuff that we're doing that is the cool parts of it are actually done by an outside website called My League Manager. And My League Manager is doing all of these additional things, and it uses the web hooks back into EA Sports to update rosters. So all of the salary management and cap management, that's not in Madden. That's in My League Manager. And then the player and roster management is done in My League Manager and imported and exported out of EA's servers by the hooks they left.
Do you have to have the season pass in order to do that stuff, or is that included with the game? The extra season pass thing that they attached to FIFA is not the same thing we're talking about, right?
No, but you don't have to pay for season pass. Did you have to do season pass for Madden? To be able to play Madden online because we still play the game. So what I'm really looking forward to is now my Houston Texans are like they have a few core members of the Houston Texans, but they also have these new free agents, these new rookies that I drafted. They have some guys I traded for from other teams. They've lost key players that I just couldn't afford to keep because of my salary cap position. And now I go into free agency with like about $8 million to play with and still have a couple of positions I want to target. So they're going to be like a entirely created, reflective of my GMing team. And that's kind of cool.
It's super cool.
If only I had the stick skills to be really successful with them now. Aw. A shame. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed that. We will come back and do a very quick NFL tailgate as we wind down that season. Jeff Cannata back in a commanding lead. Del Rio is very sad, but his Seahawks are winning, so that makes him happy. We're not going to talk about my team.
Or mine.
Thanks. Cardinals.
What is that? Both of us.
Yeah. I was going to give you shit, but I'm not going to give you shit because I don't have a leg to stand on anymore. Thanks, Andrew. It was great having you here. Hope you'll come back from New York again as soon as I can get you out here again.
Please afford me.
Aw. All right, that's it, I guess. That's your weekend confirmed. Don't forget to watch Jeff every day on Totally Rad Show.
Yeah, big season for movies. Right now we got all the Halloween. This next week we have 3 movie reviews in 1 week, so check it out. Tintin, War Horse, and Sherlock Holmes, I think, are the 3 big ones.
I don't know. War Horse?
No, it's A Girl with Dragon Tattoo.
Okay.
Yeah.
War Horse made me kind of go, really?
Yeah, you should see my review.
What'd you think of Shame? Did you watch that?
I haven't seen Shame.
All right, we'll talk about that later.
All right, so there you go, folks. If you're not sticking around, that's your weekend confirmed, and we'll be right back after the end with the NFL tailgate. Otherwise, we're a ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you. Show you that I care. Show you that I listen. Show you that I'm here. I showed you all of that. I showed you everything. I gave my all to y'all. Following those are 3 rings. You know more about me anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed, but I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. The National Football League is running into the end of the season, and the Cardinals defeated
both of us.
And then,
that was a heartbreaker.
No. The heartbreaker was watching the Cowboys continue to be the December Cowboys.
Wow.
Yeah. And by the way, for all the people who are giving me hell about like what else did I want Romo to do, I don't care whether he throws an interception or two in the game, but when the game's on the line, he needs to make that one throw, not miss a wide open Miles Austin when they hit the blitz and then blow the game.
He was
and
wide open.
You know what else I want? I want Ryan to like go away with this ridiculous defense. These schemes where people are just like running down the field with no one covering them because he's like, I've got an imaginative blitz. It's amazing. No one will ever see this blitz coming. Well, yeah, they won't see this blitz coming because they wouldn't imagine that you'd leave a player entirely uncovered, you moron.
Evidently, that your kicker can get iced by his own coach or other coaches. It doesn't really matter.
Well, he didn't get iced this time. They got blocked.
Yeah.
He got blocked. They got it. They got in there and they blocked it. They did a great job. Anyway. So let's see. Jeff, you have taken a commanding lead again. And wait, by the way, I didn't look at the results. How are you doing in our bigger pool?
I'm still in first place. I lost a couple of spots, but I lost my buffer.
Dude, you should have gone to Vegas this year. You clearly should have gone to Vegas.
Don't jinx me.
So Jeff
last week that was what happened, is everybody picked the Niners. And as soon as everyone here picked the Niners, I knew we were going to lose.
Jeff is up in the lead. He's at 21-14. Dave is at 18-17. Brooklyn's at 16-19. And I am at 13-22. That is awful. However, I am alive in 3 of my 4 Yahoo playoffs. So I'm happy with that. All right, so here's what we're picking this week. We are doing your San Francisco 49ers at
Pittsburgh Steelers.
Big
game, Monday night.
Big game. Now, did you see Ben Roethlisberger at the end
limping.
Of that? Limping.
Limping.
Hobbling. He was hardly moving.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Is it a walking cast? Is that what you said? Oh, I didn't hear that. That's good news.
So it's Niners -3 against Pittsburgh. I know where you're going.
I'm going Niners, yeah. I mean, we rested Patrick Willis for 2 weeks. He's ready to play Monday night. I think that was the difference in the defense, honestly. And I think we're ready to rock. I think we'll be up for this game. Got something to prove.
Dave, maybe your rebuttal. His answer was, son of a bitch. he's going to go with Pittsburgh, of course, because he has to.
Yeah.
Anything else?
They could win.
That's
dude.
It, right? You're going to Pittsburgh? All right. So he's going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just to decide who I want to jinx. Brooklyn, who are you going with here? She's going to go Niners. I think I will go... I think Steelers.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's be that way.
They're playing hard for Ben.
I'm in a car, and I'm driving up to the Bay Area right after the show.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to be in town, rooting hard.
Oh, so Dave put this down backwards. So it's in Candlestick? Oh, it's at San Fran. Oh,
yeah, that's why they got the
points. Oh, so it's basically a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh on the road in San Francisco. I'm still going Pittsburgh. Next one we got is the Miami Dolphins going into Buffalo in a straight up pick 'em.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck. I'm taking Miami.
Okay.
And they're real up and down and weird. They just fired their coach, which is bizarre. But they've won, 3 of the last 4 or something crazy.
Reggie Bush finally looking good and reliable. Yeah.
So, and Buffalo baffles me. They could totally win this game, but I think I'm gonna pick in Miami for some crazy reason.
All right. Dave, your rebuttal is he's going Buffalo.
He wanted to go Buffalo anyway.
I was going Buffalo anyway. I hate to tell you this, Dave. I was going Buffalo too, so you might be in deep trouble. There's another son of a bitch. And Brooklyn's going Buffalo as well, so Jeff... Maybe Jeff is once again showing why he is 21-14.
We'll
and then
see.
Finally, wrapping up in the Monday night tilt, of course, we got to bring Tebow into the equation because that game was ridiculous.
Dude, you can't, at this point, there's something happening, man. He's got some juju going on.
The juju, I believe. He's not winning those games. Like, the stupid mistakes that were made had nothing to do with
seven
him.
Seven on that last drive, dude.
Okay,
7-for-7.
That's an unwinnable situation. If Barber isn't an idiot, by the way, also a cowboy choke artist. By the way, also a cowboy choke artist, Barber.
That's the magic. It's God is on his side, dude.
Uh-huh,
I'm telling you.
59-yard field goals.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Is there anything more fun to watch in the NFL this year than him?
The New England Patriots go into Denver working with wide receivers playing defensive backs.
Yeah.
Because their secondary is so bad. But then again, Tebow can't hit a wide open receiver unless it's the fourth quarter anyway. So who knows what the hell is going to happen. But it's New England -6.5 at Denver.
See, this is the most baffling pick for me all week. I'm struggling with this because all my logic says that New England should be up by 30 at halftime.
Yep.
But Denver's defense is very good.
They let the Colts back in.
But there's no way. New England should be. I'm taking New England despite. I kept saying I'm not going to bet against Tebow ever again, but this is the one he's going to lose, and they're going to win by a lot.
Okay. Dave.
I may be wrong.
Dave, does God love you? He wants to. He wants to.
You think it's going to be close? If it's close, Tebow wins. The only way that the New England wins is if they're up by 45.
All right. So Dave's taking Denver in the points. Brooklyn. Dave's taking Denver in the points.
Wow. What are you doing, Garnet?
I'm New England. Come on. I don't buy into the Tebow thing at all. I think that they have a great defense, and I think they've had some luck, but I don't buy into that.
I don't know what to think, man. It's going to be a fun
jumping
game
around
to watch.
Down.
If it's close,
yeah.
Then Denver wins. But I think people in the back are doing the Tebow. Something's happening.
Yes.
He's a fun player to watch, dude. Something magical happens in the fourth quarter, and that guy.
Oh, come on.
You got to admit, dude, it's something magical happened.
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was amazing watching that kicker hit that 59-yard field goal.
Yeah.
And I was laughing as a Cowboy fan. I was laughing so hard at Barber running that ball over to the sideline. I was like, good, he's an idiot for another team now. Way to go, moron. Ugh. All right. Well, there you go. Now you can see next week whether or not Jeff was right and he continues to dominate or if Dave's caught up. Dave's got an edge there.
I'll just be happy with a Niner win. That's all I care about.
All right, two shows next week. Hope you'll join us for them. And don't forget to bring in your holiday stories for our holiday show next week. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.